The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
Hey, there's even a fridge! This is great! You can put six packs of soda in here. Milk, yogurt, you can put candy bars in the freezer.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Hey, I tell you what, you can take a good look at a butcher's ass by sticking your head up there, but wouldn't you rather take his word for it? No, I mean, you can get a good look at a T-bone by sticking your head up a butcher's ass, but then, no, it's got to be your bowl.
Paul Perillo.
I have what doctors call a little bit of a weight problem. I used to grab bear claws as a kid, two at a time.
That guy in a little coat. That guy in a little coat.
And Andy. And Andy?
You know where the weight room is?
Andy Hart.
Were you watching Spanktrovision? Maybe you were watching a movie with that funny comedian. Oh, what's his name? Buddy Wackett?
Hey, that's a pretty girl down there.
Geez, I wonder if she goes out with one of the Yankees.
Eric Scalavino.
I don't like you. Probably never will. You're a smug, unhappy little man, and you treat people like they were idiots.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
I'm going to make a toast to the best bunch of freaks ever born. Maybe we weren't the smartest guys.
Maybe we spent a little too much time puking off balconies.
But we had fun, huh?
Yeah! All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. And just so you know, we're having some internet problems here, so I hope you can hear us.
So there's a chance you don't know.
Yeah, I can't get into the web radio mailbox on my computer, but I can on my phone.
Perfect.
So that's good.
We will adjust, just like the Patriots will adjust without Vince Wilfork.
So guys are here. Andy, Paul, my journeyman writers. I'm here.
You're not going to let that go, huh?
Kevin's in the booth. Eric coming by? No?
He'll be by later.
So big day here, media day here at Gillette Stadium, Wednesday, as it always is, Wednesday. It's not always Wednesday, but it's always media day when
I knew
it's
he
Wednesday.
Was going to go down that road.
Unless it's
Hump
a Thursday
day.
Game. Unless it's a Thursday game in which media day becomes a Monday.
Right. Or a Monday game in which media day is still a Wednesday, but it's kind of a Thursday.
So how you guys feeling about this team? I know the Wilson Hart Index came out yesterday, first time this year. The Patriots are ranked 8
yep.
on the index, which doesn't. Sounds pretty good, although the Denver Broncos are rated lower than the Kansas City Chiefs, so I don't know about that.
I think I'd have the Patriots higher, too.
Yeah.
Fred, I've said a million times, it's about the numbers. And if you go into the numbers,
I know, it's not
the Chiefs are phenomenal. I'm not saying they're going to keep that up, but based on the numbers, the Chiefs are phenomenal. When you don't turn the ball over, that's good.
And it also, in Andy's defense, and I take more shots at the rankings than anybody, but I'll...
Than anyone should.
It's only 4 weeks in, so it's a pretty small sample size for a statistical-based formula. You know, the Indianapolis Colts had the game against Jacksonville that threw their numbers out of whack, I would imagine, because they haven't been great. I mean, they had a really good win in San Francisco, and they had a loss at home against Miami, you know. But when you end up blowing a team out, whatever it was, 38-3 or whatever it was when they beat Jacksonville, that kind of gets your numbers out of whack a little bit.
All right, so going into this week, Cincinnati Bengals, other than the game itself, what would you consider the headline for the New England Patriots this week?
Life without Wilfork.
You think that's it? It's not when Gronk and Amendola will come
I'm
back?
Still with that. Yeah. I think that's the issue.
I'm
now,
sick of that story.
Reports today, Amendola's playing.
Who reported that?
Well, yeah, right, who's reporting it?
Scoop Volan. Oh, it was the Herald. So,
well, you know what?
The Globe editors can find out in the Herald when he's actually.
Well, I was just going to say, when the Herald does something that's any way related to injuries, they've been the most accurate of all the major. Wouldn't you say?
I would say 100%.
Yeah.
You know, and
aside from one big blemish on their record, they're pretty good.
I'm talking about the injury. I'm talking about the injury.
No, I'd say related to injuries,
right? Yeah.
But and even within that notebook today. There was sort of a smarmy line, about, you know, as we've said all along or something along
ooh,
those lines.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that was a not-so-subtle sort of shot at everybody else. Like, yeah, listen, we've been telling you this stuff. You're not listening to us, but so this is now, what we've been saying.
But now it's interesting that they specifically said on the Mandola, and they didn't mention Gronkowski in that, right? So they're pretty certain that Amendola is going to play, but they still don't know about Gronkowski.
And I joked about this on Twitter. If what we're reading is true, then Belichick doesn't know. Because it depends on when Gronk says, all right, I can go this
right
way. If Bill really says, believes that the medical staff has cleared him and he's ready and he won't play, it's only up to him, right? I mean,
right.
Bill doesn't really know.
Right. It's not up to his father. It's
and
not
if
up
you
to
even...
his agent. It's not up to the team doctor. Right now, it seems like it's up. It's when Gronk says he's ready.
And if you take all the reports as being accurate, maybe Gronk told him last Thursday, yeah, I think I'm going to play this week. And then something changed and he said, you know what? It doesn't feel quite right. I'm going to give it one more week. Whatever. If you take Ben Volen's report on the surface and say, okay, the source was right, maybe Gronk kind of gave a false answer at some point last week that led them to believe he was going to play. Right? So it's all up to Gronk. It would appear.
Yeah, it would appear. Yeah.
So therefore, unless Gronk tells us he's playing, we just don't know.
So now Bill's going to say, all right, you're not sure when you're coming back. You're not playing this week anyway. All right? It's not your decision. It's my decision. You're out.
I don't think that would be a good decision.
No. No.
I'd have a hard time spinning that one in the best interest of the football team.
All
that's
right.
A vague statement, but I'm not sure that one would be good.
Webradio at patriots.com, 508-298-0398, or 855-PATS-500 is the number. We have a number of international numbers. You can check patriots.com for those, depending on where you live in the world.
Has Italy been fixed?
I don't know if it's been fixed, but there's a number. So if someone's from Italy and they want to call in,
Al,
give it a shot. And we'll see if it connects.
I don't know if it's been fixed, but there's a number.
Right.
That's valuable.
Right.
Right.
We'll see if the number works.
Today would actually be a good day to call because if they can't listen because there's internet issues, they could call and partake live.
Yeah, right. I was thinking that when Fred opened the show, but then I said, well, if they can't hear,
they don't know
to call.
But maybe they'll just call because they can't hear. Right?
Peter has an interesting thing, and it relates to what we're talking about as in terms of trying to find
Hello,
out who's
Peter.
Available. How can news sources repeatedly quote league sources as possibly having knowledge of conversations between Gronk and the Patriots?
I think that's a really interesting point. And I often wonder, and we've all talked about this stuff because we're in the media, so we care about it. What is the way they term their sources? What do you think that means?
Well, hasn't league sources, isn't that like recent, like the last couple of years? Like that's the blanket now of anyone involved in the team, with the player. It seems like league sources, it used to be there was a difference between league sources and team sources. Now they blanket everything as league sources.
Well, you're assuming that you know what the source is.
Well, I think this is a lot like journeyman. Depends which reporter
but
uses it.
You never see team sources anymore. You just see league sources.
Oh, I think you still
see
team
sources. I see that
many
times.
Not this team, because
there aren't any. But I
think it depends on the reporter. I think different reporters.
I do too.
I mean, unless reporters are telling other reporters, well, I quoted Roger Goodell and I called him a league source. And I quote, they're all using their own. I personally think agents get the league
agents
source.
Agents is league source.
Because it's not a team source. You can't call it a team source because they don't work for a team. But they work in the league. They're an agent. They're NFLPA.
See, I think
that.
An agent should just be a source. I don't think it should be titled a league source because really they're not.
Well, you take it literally, just so you know, a lot of league sources do not actually work for the league.
Right. Yeah, I'm saying. I think they use that too liberally.
Journeyman sources.
Well, that's what I said. It all depends on how, you know, what you're terming. But I do think that people use agents as being league sources, not team sources. You know, sources close to the player.
Right.
Could be the player's family.
Yep. Friend, wife,
you know,
brother, sister, agent.
Could be an agent.
Yeah.
So I just think it's that the terminology of it is sort of much ado about nothing to me. It's whether or not it's valid.
Right.
And you don't know. You don't know if it's valid.
Well, does it add anything in your mind? If it's just said source versus
nothing.
Something else, it doesn't
And
add.
I think to some people, that's why I think the email raises a good question. I think some people do look at it that way, like a team source. That carries more weight if you're talking about the Patriots and you say a team source as opposed to talking about the Patriots and say a league source. Because then someone's like the email, how do they know what's going on with the Patriots?
But if it's the agent who's a league source, he could be closer to the situation than the equipment manager.
To me, a
source
is a source. It's all about whether or not the information is valid.
somebody from 98.5, a certain producer, told me over the weekend that he asked another person from 98.5 who's been in the business, how often are these sources just made up? And that person said 50% of the time.
Wow. I don't believe that.
I'd like to not believe that.
I don't believe
that. I hope not. You know?
I don't believe that at all.
Plagiarism is like the worst thing you can do in journalism. But I think
making up the worst thing you can do is right up there.
I think that's worse.
Right,
I think making up information is the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
It's nonfiction.
Yeah.
Newspaper is nonfiction. So if you're making something up, that's the worst thing you can do. And that's what the guy, was it Blair, right?
Yeah, the guy.
Jason Blair?
Yes, from the New York Times.
Just made up a story.
Right.
That to me is the most unforgivable offense for any journalist.
Yep. It violates the trust.
It's kind of like betting on a game. You know, you have to go in, when you watch a game, you have to go in with the assumption that it's on the level.
Right.
And you have to, when you read a newspaper story, you have to go in. You could disagree with the story. You can think the guy's a hack writer. But you have to say that somebody told him the information that he is saying. You can't just say he made it up.
Right.
That's the worst.
But.
And I don't believe that 50% of anonymous sources are made up.
That's what this person.
What percentage? 50-50.
If it's less than 100%, then it's
less than 1%.
Oh, it's not 100, Fred. I guarantee stuff is made up. I guarantee.
That's why I gave myself an out.
Yeah, there's definitely stuff that's made up.
You know, you might have something that you just
too dirty, too competitive, too.
But I would like to think that in that less than 1% would be something that I know this is true, and I just can't get anybody to tell me that it's true. And you want to sort of give it a little bit more, and you give it one of those. You know, according to a source. And I don't think that happens often. I really don't. I don't think people make up stuff and attribute it to a source.
They can't. That's grounds for immediate firing.
Oh, like obviously. I said, there's a difference between being wrong, like the Herald story that
but
you're talking about.
But so diddling little boys, and there was a guy who was kept at a school forever. Like,
why do we have to go
is,
there?
What is
why
in that,
so there?
That enormous
in
cavern of your mind?
Andy Dambler Hart over here.
How do you go there?
Because you think it just couldn't happen, and everything you think couldn't happen
happens.
He doesn't
think it couldn't happen. He said it was 50-50.
Right.
No. He said somebody told
somebody
him.
Somebody told somebody. Yeah.
He said he'd like to think it's 100%.
Yes, I would like to think that. But
it's not.
I know it isn't.
It's not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course it isn't.
Okay.
But what does that have to do with diddling little boys?
Because you'd like to think that if a guy was caught doing that, he wouldn't be protected in Harvard for decades.
Right. You would like to think
that. But
he is. Right.
So everything you think is bad and wrong and terrible happens.
But I still like to think. You know, things could be better.
Right. And you like to think that Lance Armstrong didn't take steroids. You like to live
that
in a naive world.
Why that analogy?
Because it's the worst thing I could think of.
Because it's on your mind.
No, it's the worst thing I could think of related to
sports.
That's
a horrible thing to say. I mean, the other stuff that's always on his mind, that's one thing. But I gotta defend you.
Thanks, Paul.
I feel a little like Jerry Callahan. I'm going to come out strong against child abuse and sexual abuse.
Webradio at patriots.com, again, is the email. And I do have now access to the email box on my computer. So
excellent.
That's good. We're working right now.
Are we actually live? Do we know?
I assume so.
I'm glad you got your box.
Yeah. If you can't hear us, hear this and email me. Yeah. So, Paul, you've written off Vince Wilfork. See you later.
It's what?
You're not worried about the loss of Vince Wilfork?
What are you talking to? What are you talking about?
You're not concerned about losing Vince Wilfork?
No, I'm concerned about losing Vince Wilfork.
Oh, I thought your stance was not a big deal.
I don't think physically it's as big a deal as it is mentally, off the field. I think his leadership is huge. Huge void.
Huge. So would he be an exception to the rule, and maybe he would be around the locker room more than a guy on IR?
I don't think you can't do what the things that I think that he's valuable at, you can't do
when you're
in a boot.
No.
Well, we saw Matthew Slater on the field last week.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's not on IR.
No, I know, but he's out of the picture.
Yeah, I think that Vince's on-field performance is going to be missed. You know, I don't know where you get this, you know, 180. I mean, you take it to a ridiculous extreme.
Mm.
I do think he gets double teamed.
Mm.
I think that affects the rest of the. I don't think that Joey Meatball's going to get double teamed like Vince would. That affects the other guys.
Does this hurt Chandler Jones?
I think it could.
Yeah.
I think it could. I just don't think it's. I think, you know, you kept making the point yesterday that it's unfair to just call him a run stuffing defensive tackle.
I think it is.
I think that's what he is. He's a run-stuffing defensive tackle. He doesn't provide really a whole lot in terms of pass rush and other stuff. Now, where he's different than most run-stuffing defensive tackles is I've seen him go out and blow up a screen pass. And I've seen him get sideline to sideline because he's ridiculously athletic for that position. But I haven't seen him provide a whole lot of pocket collapsing and stuff like that that you sort of credit
him
with yesterday.
See, I do. I think he pushes it up. I think he makes it hard for the quarterback to step up.
But I'm not dismissing him on the field. I just don't think there's a lot of teams that are going to sit there and say, well, now he's out of there. We're just going to run it right down their throats. Teams that run the ball are now they're enjoying this. But, New Orleans in 2 weeks is not going to sit there and say, we're not going to have Drew Brees throw the ball. Vince is out.
But
we're going to run
it. This game, I could see the Bengals testing that. Can't you?
Yeah, they want to be balanced, but they're not going to run it effectively. They're not a very good running team.
Well, we'll see. I mean, they might. We're going to see if they are.
Well, they haven't really yet.
But what I'm saying is they're not a very good running team.
No, but Bernard's doing pretty good, right?
The other guy? Bernard has been like 4-6. He's been much better than Benny. But what I'm saying is,
and Benny's their lead back in terms of carries.
They don't run the ball all that effectively. They might be better at it this week, and it will be interesting to see how a team now, yes, Vince missed the whole game last week, but now a team gets to prepare for the Patriots without Vince, and if that changes their game plan at all. But to me, I would welcome that because how I feel. I feel like you need to throw the ball to win and score points. And if Cincinnati wants to run the ball, 10-15% more than they would have, I think that's a good thing for the Patriots.
Fred, I saw an email that was saying that they didn't think it was going to be a huge deal that we got. I think Aspie, whatever. Where would you have ranked Wilfork prior to the injury in terms of guys you couldn't lose on defense? Would he have been
third.
1, 2, 3?
Yeah, I think third.
Third. Behind Tlaib and Jones.
See, I think...
With maybe fourth, because I might put Ninkovic in
there. Well, you know what? Now that you say that, I'll put him fifth. Because I'll put Mayo in front of Wilfork.
I'll draw the line at four.
Okay.
Where would you put him? Because I think it's a great
Tlaib
question.
Tlaib 1, Jones 2. To me, those are...
Yeah, I think it's a great question.
I would probably put Ninkovic 3.
Because he does so many things.
I would probably have him 4.
Yeah, he's either 4 or 5. I think that Mayo's the only other one in question.
It's hard to say, because it's not like we have a great backup to Vince Wilfork, but we've seen Joe Villano play.
But and the thing
I don't want Daron Harmon and Tavon Wilson playing.
Well, that's the thing.
So if one of those two guys got hurt,
I just think that it's
McCourty. They don't have a lot of depth.
No,
they don't. They don't. This team,
they have no depth.
This team, as a team, does not have a lot of depth
except running back.
And we talked about that, and we talked about it in the spring, in the summer. That's one of the only positions that they have a lot of depth.
Ironically, when Gronkowski and Amendola come back, they will have depth in pass receiving.
I don't think they have a lot of depth with those guys.
Oh, I think because now the guys that you're counting on become secondary players.
But
you're not counting on them.
You haven't used a tight end yet.
No, I'm talking about guys.
So if you get Gronk back, you have one tight end, not three.
No, I'm talking about guys who catch passes.
Okay.
When they come back, Amendola and Gronkowski, forget about the position, you have depth at that area.
Well, not really.
But yeah, see, I'm with Andy. Like Andy just made the point about...
You were afraid of the freaking weapons last year when they actually
have depth. It's unreal. I mean, when Kenbrell Tompkins was the equivalent of the seventh receiver last year, now he's number two and we have depth. I don't understand that.
But he won't be number two when Amendola and Gronk come back.
Okay, he's three, then. Last year, he would have been seven.
All those guys get pushed down, and because of their experience, they've gotten better, and now...
You'll have more depth than you have now. That's all you can say.
And I think decent depth.
Yeah,
what I'm saying is...
I don't understand how you were worried about weapons last year coming into the season, and now you think they get those two back and you have good depth of weapons.
No, because...
It makes no sense to me.
Here's where you're misconstruing what I said last year. Last year, I specifically was saying the wide receiving core, that we had a one, and that our two, Brandon Lloyd, was not a two.
Okay, well then last year, so now they don't have a four.
Right now I'm talking about anyone who catches the ball, not just wide receivers.
Okay, well I disagree with it on whichever level you want to.
Yeah. Any disclaimer you want to throw in there, I still don't think they have a lot of depth in guys who can catch footballs.
Yeah, I think they'll have some pretty good
with
depth.
With Gronk and Amendola, I don't think they have
once
depth.
Once they come back, they will.
I think that gives them two reliable guys and one guy who is off to a great start in Edelman. That's what I think. Gronk and Amendola would give you two reliables And then Edelman.
Edelman's not reliable at this point?
He's off to a great start. I don't think he's... I'm not willing to say four games makes him reliable.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry.
Fred, he has more catches in four games than he did in three years.
He's played 5 years.
Right, because he's had more opportunity to play steadily.
And by the way, he's due to get hurt.
Well, that's my point. If he can play 16 games, then I'll put him in the reliable category.
You're comparing year four to a year one where he came in never having been a wide receiver before. It's not even a fair comparison.
Year one was actually the high of his career.
Yeah.
He has 32 catches in the last three.
You don't think
that was after 30
as a rookie. Better wide receiver now than he was the past 3 years?
Yes.
Sure. Of course he is.
Yes, can he stay on the field?
Well, that's a whole different
situation. And I don't know about the last 3 years.
That makes him reliable. That's what I'm saying. I'm not willing to say four games makes you reliable. If he can do it...
Well, then Gronk's not reliable.
All right.
Right?
Because Gronk...
And then Amendola's not reliable.
Because Gronk...
You just called Amendola reliable for the same reason he shouldn't be in your book.
No, I said you have two
guys...
You
just did say that. Case in point.
All right, listen.
I don't even know what he's talking about.
I want to start over again because I think this is a good discussion, actually. But Andy mentioned, I don't want to see
what the hell we were going to talk about today.
You should never wonder about that.
I never even have that in my mind, even for a split second. We'll find something. Andy mentioned the safety.
Is that Roy Cummings?
If McCourty were out, you know, they have Jerron Harmon, they have Tavon Wilson, but I don't know what it would look like.
Right.
I know what it looks like when Kembrell Tompkins and Aaron Dobson are your 1 and 2. It ain't looking good.
But it's looking better.
What did you want? Like, what did you see that made you think that it looks so much better? Like, I just
production.
See a, I see a tooth pull.
I also worry about
Tompkins. I see a tractor pull
when
every
his
week.
Touches go from 14 to 6. If those are the 6 drops, then he has a horrific game. Right now, he's less than 50%.
Wasn't he
catches.
Still 6 for 11 the other night?
Yes, but that's my point.
Like, if
he doesn't get the touches.
You know, you can look at it that way. I look at it as addition by addition. You get these two guys. You get these two guys back, Gronkowski and Amendola. It pushes these guys further down the depth chart.
I said you're deeper than you are now.
Yes.
That's a fact. It's not even
but
arguable.
It doesn't make you deep. There's a difference.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's all I'm saying. You have Gronkowski and Amendola. That makes you better.
Makes you better and deeper now.
Yes, but not
Wait,
deep.
Wait, Fred. If they activate Armin Armstead, they're deeper.
We
but are they
seen him play.
Better?
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't really know about the receivers either. I don't know what you know about these receivers that I don't.
I don't know what I've missed with Tompkins and Dobson to lead everybody to believe.
They're fine.
That's good.
They're getting better, and I think you know they'll continue
they're getting,
to get
they're getting better. But are they at the level that you need them to be at to be reliable?
Edelman is,
I didn't
know,
write off Edelman. Well, I'm not writing him off at all.
You know,
case in point. I don't even know what that means.
He doesn't even know what he's talking about, writing him off. I said I want to see him be able to do it.
You said he's unreliable because of injuries.
I said you have two guys that are coming back, and then you have a third guy who's off to a good start. Let's see if he can play 16 games.
Right.
That's what I said.
Right. Because of injuries, right?
Yeah, so what's wrong with that?
Well, can't you say the same thing about the two guys that are coming back?
Of course you can.
All right, so nobody's
reliable. So why do you think they're so deep is my point. You made my case in point.
Yeah, I think they're going to be.
You think they have this deep. For some reason, when you had Hernandez and Gronkowski healthy, and then you had Brandon Lloyd and Welker. That wasn't deep, but now they're deep.
Again,
I don't get that.
You apparently weren't listening when I explained it to Big Head that I was specifically talking about the wide receiving core.
So you think the wide receiving core last year was less deep than it is this year?
It will be once Amendola comes back. Once Amendola comes back, with what we've seen out of Edelman now, this will be a better wide receiving core than they had last year.
So Amendola, Edelman, Tompkins, and Dobson is better than Welker, Lloyd.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Wait a minute. So
you might be the only person on the planet that thinks that, but okay.
Absolutely.
And you can boil this down to you think that Edelman has had this great year 5 jump. And I'm being serious. It's not a shot.
No.
You clearly think he's a far better player now than he was last year.
I do. At wide receiver.
Why? I think it's just opportunity.
Okay, but
he's just the guy.
You take that opportunity and you show what you can do with it, and he's proven himself. He could have just as easily pooped his pants this year.
You just almost said it. I saw your lips.
Right. He could have just as easily not performed this year, right?
No.
No.
Why? He's an NFL player. Why would he poop his pants?
Because a lot of NFL players, given the opportunity, don't perform.
But he has shown over the years that he can perform.
Oh my God.
The old argument.
You guys are unbelievable.
When Edelman has been given chances, he's been decent.
Oh my God.
We're basically arguing Edelman's been decent for his entire career, and you're saying he sucked and is now
exactly.
good. That's kind of what this
he
is.
He hasn't
about.
Been any better this year than he
when
was last year. He's been on the field.
For Wes Welker, he always was productive. The issue we always faced was when he's not filling in, when he just gets two or three chances.
You can say wow as many times as you want, but it's like bizarro PFW in progress again. Andy and Paul are telling you that Edelman, when given opportunities, has been able to catch the ball, and you keep saying, wow.
But you just told me he's unreliable.
Because he can't do it for 16 games,
well,
that's all.
Neither can the other two that are coming back.
So why do you think they're so deep? You're making Andy and my point for us.
Case in point.
You said the only two guys that are coming back that are reliable are Gronkowski and Amendola.
I said the only ones you know of that can do it week in and week out when they're healthy are those two.
Well, I know Edelman when he's healthy can do it.
Well, why do you know that now and you didn't know it last year? Again, you're making my point again.
He's proven it. We've needed him week in and week out, and he's done it.
Fred, he did the same thing last year early in the year when he took over
really?
For Welker.
He took over for Welker, and everyone was screaming, why is he out there?
Because they should. You were replacing an all-pro.
The only difference is you had more weapons last year, so he didn't get all the balls thrown to him. That's the difference that Andy's talking about, opportunity.
When a guy
you
has,
had Gronk. When you guy, had Hernandez. You had Welker.
A lot of,
and Edelman chipped
there's
in.
There's a lot of guys when asked to step up to
that's
be your number one
that's why last year
target,
was better than this year.
There's a lot of guys when asked to step up to be your number one target who's never been that wouldn't do it. They couldn't
right.
do it.
Except Edelman has done that since his rookie year.
He's proven that he can do it as the number one guy.
Since his rookie year, he's proven that, actually.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
When he replaced Welker, he was always productive.
I'm glad that you guys have come around. It's great.
No,
I'm not coming around. I love it.
I've not come around because I don't think he'll be... I'm going to guess right now in 3 weeks he won't be on the active
because
roster.
Because of injury.
He won't be eligible for a game.
Because of injury.
Yeah.
But not because of ability.
No.
I just want to make sure of that.
I've never... First
okay.
of all,
all right.
I've said from the moment he touched the ball as a punt returner, I said he was a special punt returner.
There's no argument here that the guy has had an injury problem. No doubt. But I think...
But you think he's made this meteoric rise from one year to the next.
I think he's raised his ability...
Okay.
You know, as a receiver,
so we disagree.
Every year, and I think now he's proven himself.
He's better this year, I'll give you that.
He's been more productive
this year. He's always been able to fill in. The question we always had was, if he only gets four catches a game, four opportunities, he had trouble making those plays. Third quarter, cold off the bench, we got a third down. We always talked about he wasn't Jabbar Gaffney. Gaffney had that ability. No catches in the first half. You need a first down late in the game, he could make it. Edelman couldn't. The one thing he definitely has done is it's a higher percentage. Early in his career, he'd replace Welker. He'd have 11 catches on 16, 17 targets. This year, it's, you know, 7 of 7, 7 of 9. It's a better percentage.
Sure.
But he has always gotten the job done given full game opportunities. Always. That's what he's done since the beginning of his career.
Well, I think he's a lot better than he was in
he's
the
better.
Beginning of his career.
I won't say a lot.
Well,
he's better.
His rookie year, yeah.
He's better.
He's
but
already,
not a lot.
He's nearing what he caught as a rookie. He's been far more productive this year than he was as a rookie. He's getting better. No question about it. But you had him last year. He's not much different than he was last year.
Opportunity is
he was your fifth option last year. Now he's your first option, and you think you're deeper now when Gronkowski and Amendola come back.
Sure.
Okay.
I do.
That's all I'm arguing with you about. Not how good this guy is or how good that guy is. Last year, they had more options in the passing game than they do this year. That's all. That's my only argument. The rest of it is all semantics, like all of our arguments are.
I started this out by saying one of the thinnest places they are right now is, you know, guys who can catch balls from Brady, you know. But when these guys come back, that's actually going to be a pretty good area for this team.
It'll be less thin.
No, would be my opinion.
And that's all I'm saying.
We've been spoiled. Don't get me wrong. We've been spoiled with too many options over the years. You've gotten used to having four or five guys that you thought were legitimately good options. Most teams don't have that year in and year out. The great offenses do. You know, Atlanta's a team where, you know, Harry Douglas is your fourth or fifth option, and you go, that's a pretty good fourth or fifth option.
Right.
But not a lot of teams have that.
And you know what you're seeing? When you have that fourth or fifth option who has to be a little bit more than that because Roddy White can't run right now, and then all of a sudden you get a team like the Patriots that comes in and they say, we're not going to let Julio Jones do it to us.
Right.
And now all of a sudden you say, huh, we're not so good with just Tony Gonzalez and Harry Douglas.
Okay, got to go.
Oh,
where are you going?
Say hi to Nink for us.
Oh, that's right. Andy has to go interview Rob Ninkovich for the TV
show. You're going to bring up that PFW thing, right? you know, how he likes to read the paper and
Find out what he was laughing about. All right, webradio at patriots.com, 508-298-0398, 855-PATS-500 is the toll-free number. Let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline where Eldridge is on the line, and I'm sure he wants to talk about linebackers. Oh, no, wait, wide receivers.
Nose tackles.
Yeah.
No, wide receivers and defensive backs. How you guys doing?
Good.
And I think that was Paul doing Oregon. Man, I agree with you. Ain't no way this offense receiving corps is better than last year. Not in nobody's pipe dream. I don't know why you arguing that, but no, last year was a whole lot better. Even with Bambi jumping through the air. But don't Dobson sort of remind you of Bambi sometimes? Instead of you keep your feet down the ground, you catch more passes.
Dobson or Tompkins?
Dobson. Well, Thompson too sometimes.
Tompkins reminds me a lot of Lloyd. Yes.
Yeah, but Dobson also reminds me when he's jumping in the air sometimes.
Yeah, Tompkins and, drives me crazy.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too. Well, see, that's my
Dobson. I just haven't seen enough out of. I'm wondering a little about his toughness.
Yeah, that's the thing. His separation skills.
But Tompkins drives me insane because it never looks right. You know, he's always seen, like, I agree with Eldridge. His body doesn't always seem to be, you know, in tune with the rest of his mind. I don't know.
It's like he
makes some great
plays. He turns
plays
around and the ball's on him too quickly.
You know, what did John in L.A., you know, yesterday, you know, he makes the
easy ones look hard and the
hard
ones
look
impossible.
You know?
Yeah.
Ron Swoboda.
I got two questions. Okay. I think we're short all across the board. Cornerbacks, wide receivers. And I'm just wondering.
In terms of depth?
Depth-wise.
Yeah, I think you're right.
They brought him back. I don't know why they brought the Jag back in the first place. With a bunch of free agents out there, they could probably do a bit better job. And I'm just wondering why we're so short back in the defense and the receiver area. So Dobson, don't nobody know when Dobson's coming back, right?
No, Dobson's okay. But according to the reports, Dobson's okay. They expect him to play Sunday.
Okay, Slater's out too, though, right?
But
Slater's not a
wide
receiver. Slater's a special
teams
player.
He's not a wide receiver, but he's taking that spot. I know he's a special team captain.
He's taking up a spot.
The problem, to me, the problem isn't with the amount of wide receivers. It's with the talent of the wide receivers. You have four guys. I'm just not sure that you're good enough. Actually, five guys.
Well, we'll find out Sunday.
Yeah, we will. Well, we'll get a little bit more. But until Gronk comes back, we won't see them at full strength.
Mm-hmm. Well, my other question is, any replacement for Wilford?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who?
Oh, do we have any? Not that I know.
Do we have any?
I mean, they have a couple of guys in the practice squad, in Forston and A.J. Francis, that they could promote. I find it a little interesting that they haven't officially put him on IR yet. I don't know what that's all about.
ESPN Boston's Field Yates usually has a pretty good handle on guys they're trying out, working out. And he says that based on that, it looks like they're going to try to just do this from within. You know.
Yeah, I don't know what they've done in the past,
Seymour
though.
At all.
Yeah. No, Seymour's not coming back. Seymour doesn't want to play. He wants to get paid.
Oh, he won't get paid.
Yeah, he's got enough money where he can make his. He doesn't have to be forced into any, you know, veteran minimum deals.
Okay, one more question. I'll let you go. Besides bringing Cole back, was there any other corner out there that was a whole lot better that they could have just tried out? Don't even come to the familiarity of the team.
But like who?
He's not a good cover guy either.
Well, that's what he's asking. He's wondering if there
are. Well, that's
any.
What I'm saying. You know, give me an example. I mean, we're 5 weeks into the NFL season. What caliber of cornerback do we actually think is available on the street right now?
Yeah.
I mean, in a league where everybody needs more cornerbacks, I mean, no one says to himself. No one says we're set
Justin
at cornerback.
King still available?
Who?
Ain't Justin King still available? Justin King.
I don't even know who. Carolina. I don't even know who that is. I apologize. I don't know who that. Justin King.
Justin King.
I apologize. This is 2 days, and I'm telling you, I'm losing my status as the know-it-all of everything that's irrelevant.
Stripa, send us a free agent list of
quarterbacks
available.
I'm losing my.
Thanks,
moniker.
Eldridge.
It's 2 days in a row. I have no idea who a guy is.
Look, I'm no expert, but there could be a guy sitting on the sideline like a Seymour who, because of money. Nobody wants to sign.
Yeah, I don't think there's a cornerback like that. Or you'd know him like you know Seymour.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
And I also think that if a cornerback of that caliber were available, he would get paid because that is an important position. You know, like I said, what team is out there saying, We don't have to worry about cornerback. We have enough
right.
of those. No one.
Nobody.
No one has enough cornerbacks in this league.
Max from New Hampshire says, I've been excited about the prospect of Armin Armstead coming back, and now with Vince out, he seems even more important. First, will Armstead be healthy enough this season to get on the field?
No idea.
And if he does, will he play inside or outside on the defensive line, and what kind of impact will he have?
Inside. Don't know what kind of impact he'll have. He's a 300-pound guy. He's like a 295.
It would help to even know what the illness is, because, you know, if it's like hepatitis, then, you know.
Well, I mean, he had surgery for an infection. I don't think you have surgery for an infection
what?
For hepatitis. Like a staph infection would be my guess.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I don't know. You're right. I don't know. We just don't know.
Like, let's just say it was a staph infection. What's the recovery time? How debilitating is it? I don't know.
I don't either. And I just think that this is going to be another, you know, situation like Zach Sudfeld, where, you know, the poor guy is going to be put in a position where he's going to come back. And everybody's going to be like, that's it? And I'm like, well, what do you mean that's it? We don't have any idea what kind of impact this guy can make. You know, expectations are going to, I think, hurt him. People are going to be looking at Vince, and that's not who he is. I'm hopeful that there's a chance that he could come back and he'll be eligible to practice in another couple of weeks. So maybe we'll see if they exercise that option. But I would caution. Let's use some caution here. We don't really know what we have. We have not seen this guy in pads yet. Not even once. He didn't participate
right.
at all in
we
training
have no
camp.
No idea.
It's just, I don't want to, like, we're not getting Warren Sapp here, you know? And if we do, I mean, that's great if he ends up being that kind of an impact player. But to rely on that.
The day he comes on the field will be the
first time he's ever been in an NFL game.
I mean, come on. You know, he's not going to be the answer. Artie in Boston, on the subject of lack of depth, I do not profess to be an expert on NFL history, so can you educate me on the history of the 53-man roster? How long has it been set at 53, and how did they agree on that number? I suspect it was a heavily contested and debated issue between the owners and the Players Association. Is there any prospect of changing it someday? Well, there's certainly a prospect of changing it. They
yes.
talk about that all the time,
yes.
especially if they go to an 18-game season.
Yeah, there's been talk about adding to that roster and whatnot. I don't know what the origins of the 53 are. I can only tell you that as long as I've been here with you, Freddie, it's been 53
yeah.
with the inactives. There's been some minor tweaking of the inactives. They used to have that emergency quarterback designation.
Right.
They no longer have that. So now it's just 46 are active. On Sunday, so you only need 7 instead of 8 inactives.
Right.
I don't know when exactly 53 came to being. It used to be that you had a roster and everybody was eligible to play. And then they decided, I think, to expand the roster but have the same amount eligible to play on Sunday. I think it was a 45-man roster. And
right.
what the compromise was, let's add some guys so when we have injuries, we have the ability to
yep.
to have 45 healthy players or something like that. And I think that's what they did. That was the compromise. But I don't know exactly when
it started.
I would say late 90s, mid to late 90s.
I think now it's increased,
maybe,
right?
Maybe it was before
back
that.
In the day.
Yeah, it was a 45-man roster.
Right.
So if you had 6 or 7 guys hurt, like the Patriots throughout the first month of the season, at least half of their inactives have been they haven't been able to play. They've been hurt, right?
Right.
Gronk, Amendola,
right.
you know, Will Svitek. Most of their inactives have been injuries, and that's the reason why they've been active. So if you had a 45-man roster and 4 or 5 of those guys were hurt, not able to play, well, now you're only having 40 for game day.
Right.
The compromise was, let's have a 45-man game day roster, but have a roster of 53.
Right.
So that way we can have 45 healthy on game day, and the other team can have 45 healthy on game day.
Right.
That's why they did it. I don't know. It might have been when they did the new CBA with the free agency in 93. That's when the salary cap era sort of was instituted.
Right. And, you know, way back in the day, guys would play both ways.
Well,
and,
yeah, you're going way back
yeah.
to the 50s with Paul.
Sure. Travis in Collierville, Tennessee. Wilfork was listed on the injury report with an ankle this past week. He ends up playing and having what appeared to be a fluke injury, but it knocks him out for the year. Did his previous ankle problem contribute to his more severe injury, and should the medical staff be held liable to clearing him to play? Yet another reason Gronkowski might be saying to himself, maybe I shouldn't listen to the Patriots medical staff 100%, but take their clearance under advisement and be overly cautious.
First of all, I think he was listed as a foot injury. which doesn't necessarily make it not related to this, but we don't know if it had anything to do with this. I don't have the answer to that question. So I have a hard time, you know, calling into question the decision right to play him. Now, he was a full participant in practice all 3 days, so it couldn't have been that serious of an injury.
Right.
You know, a guy like Vince does not need to be out there for every rep of every practice at this stage
of
his career.
And those Achilles, I mean, it could be related, but it would be just as, you know, not surprising if it wasn't. I remember, you know, when Marino popped his, he didn't even get hit. He was kind of like standing in the pocket, and he had thrown the ball, and he took a couple steps, and it just popped. So they can happen like that.
Okay, Kevin just printed out something that Adam Kaplan had worked on, last updated October 1st. So it's pretty current. There are some reasons. There's some notable names, not necessarily great players, but names, according to this list, if it's accurate. Cornerbacks, Ronald Bartell. It's a guy who started in the league. Stanford Rout, Sheldon Brown, Terrence McGee, Yoselio Hansen, former Philadelphia Eagle, Marcus Trufant, veteran guy. Will Allen, I think it's the Will Allen who was here last year on IR. Who knows? Antoine Molden spent some time with the Patriots. Justin King is that name that Eldridge brought up. He's listed on here. Laquan Lewis. Travis Daniels is a guy, I believe, from LSU that had some success early on in his career. So there are some guys available, some names. Daquan Menzies is a guy that I kind of like, actually, Alabama.
Yeah.
But again, you know, Champ Bailey, not all on that list.
They're all sitting there for a reason.
Right. You know, they're guys that you know, but they're not great players. And Jacob Lacey's another one I skipped. They're guys that have played in the league, but they're probably either dealing, A, with something physical that is causing them to be available at this point, or B, just don't have it anymore.
Right.
But listen, if something were to happen with Aqib Talib, Fred, you're going to need to sign one or two of these guys.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're going to be dealing with Dennard and Arrington and just Logan Ryan.
Marquise Cole.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Eldridge. That's not the answer.
LT from Adelaide, hello to the franchise, the two journeymen, the practice squad member of PFW, and Eric, who's off the roster. If you were the head coach,
I thought Eric was the practice squad guy.
If you were the head coach this week, how would you defend AJ Green? Would you place Talib in man-to-man, or would you double-team him? I also wanted to see what you think of Michael Buchanan's play thus far. I'm a big fan of the three defensive end pass rush package with Chandler Jones on the inside, and think Buchanan has some nice pass rush ability. Not rush football related, but are any of you Breaking Bad fans? I remember Andy. No, we're not, but I do want to watch.
Yeah, it's not that I'm not a fan. I haven't seen the show. Right. I've heard obviously great things about it, but yeah. I'm not familiar.
I saw the first episode and thought, "Wow, this is going to be good," and I haven't seen one since.
Well, I just don't get that. Yeah. Why did you stop?
I don't know. It's
is that
hard.
One of those things where you say, I just don't have any time? I don't have time for another show?
Exactly. I can't get involved.
I've been trying to watch some of the new shows on network television, and nothing is really nothing is really.
Let me tell you something.
There was a couple that looked like that promising.
That Blacklist, I thought the one with James Spader.
Haven't seen that.
He's this guy that turns himself in the FBI. And I thought, oh, okay, this is a neat concept. Oh, my God, what a disappointment. First of all, you know, you're used to watching these shows now on HBO and Showtime where they really push the envelope.
Yeah.
So the writing on network television is for an audience that is so much dumber.
Yeah.
They have to explain everything. There's nothing that they expect the audience to be able to figure out.
I think the only thing left for network TV because of that is
reality and sports.
Sitcoms.
Yeah.
You can have cleverly written sitcoms
and
be funny, but if you want to push the envelope, like you said, to use your term, it's got to be on the cable network.
And then they just absolutely just lifted the whole concept of the FBI criminal relationship from Silence of the Lambs. They're not even bashful about it. It's like exactly almost word. You know,
it's funny.
It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
I'd be interested to hear what like John in L.A. has to say
be interested.
You know, guys that are in the business that know this stuff, and maybe you know they would shoot down something that we just said, or say, you know what, that's exactly what they talk about. They have to dumb it down.
Yeah, it's they dumb it down for the audience that just got finished watching The Voice. You know, it's too bad. LT also says, reread his, but what do you think of Buchanan, so far?
Buchanan has been, he's been okay. He's shown up, as a seventh round pick. I think you've gotten some, he's flashed a little bit. Certainly giving you more than you got ever out of Jake Beckett, who, by the way, has found himself back on the healthy scratch list. So, yeah, I'm intrigued by that. I remember writing his draft profile and talking to his college coach and being encouraged by that guy. I thought the resume there was a little bit greater than a seventh rounder. So, yeah, I think he's contributed a little bit. I haven't necessarily seen the pass rush being as effective as some other people have. The Chandler Jones on the inside experiment, I've seen them do some stunts where they loop him back around and they sort of free him up off the edge because he's so fast. That's worked, but I haven't seen him really beat anybody in there.
And what about Jake Beckett? I mean, wow.
Yeah. See, that's part of what we're talking about with depth. Like, you can have players.
This is a guy who must be looking at this and saying, wow, if there's a team that I could have an opportunity on, this is it. It's not like the Patriots are loaded.
Right.
It pass rush, and this is what this guy was supposed to be. It's really, what the hell's going on?
It's part of what we're talking about with depth, though. You have players that are, 2, 3, 4, 5 on a depth chart, but what do you get from that player if he has to play?
Yeah.
We'll find out, because a guy like Chris Jones is probably going to have to play a little bit.
Right.
Because you're not going to go wire to wire with Tommy Kelly and Joe Valano.
Yep.
So you're going to find out if they have to bring up one of these guys in the practice squad, if they can play, if they can be serviceable.
Alex in Philly, is Gronk playing or not? The whole cat and mouse game between the different camps and reports and unnamed sources is really getting annoying. If he's ready, let's get him out there. This situation is so frustrating that I'm almost ready to say, if he's that concerned about re-injuring himself, just put him on IR, re-sign Fells, and move on. But he's Gronk, so I'll wait until he's ready because he's worth it for now. Is on the Amendola coming back anytime soon? Well, according to the Herald, he will play.
The Herald is saying that he's on track to play on Sunday, yeah.
Also, has the Wilson Hart Wilson Index debuted yet? I'm eager to see who's the number one team and then ripping it. Well, it's the Seahawks, so you can't really rip that right now.
Yeah, he has Denver at like 5 and the Patriots at 8, so yep. I think you can rip those selections. I think both of those teams should be higher.
Yep. I think he's got Tennessee above Denver, or is that right?
He has Indianapolis above Denver.
Indy's above Denver. Yeah. Indy's playing Seattle this week, so I think Seattle's defense is going to knock down. They'll probably beat
them. Yeah, that's what I would have said a couple of weeks ago when they went out to San Francisco, too, yeah. So I don't know.
Lastly, I share the same sentiment with Patriots Nation about Talib. Pay the man, 5-year deal for under $1 million. Lock him in?
For under $1 million?
What the hell's he talking about?
My guess is that he left out a word.
Yeah.
For under a certain amount of million.
I hope so. I don't know.
What's funny? And listen, I said it yesterday, too, about paying him. I do think you have to be careful. And I do find it interesting. Mike Reese and I were talking about this morning before we shot All Access. And it's amazing how every week there is a predominant storyline, and that's the one that seems to be going to the forefront this week. He's played really well. I don't think you could expect anything more than what you're getting from Aqib Talib. He's been outstanding. So, 4 games, we just got to empty the vault and give it to
right.
him. It's still to me.
I don't think there's a
very
rush.
Yeah. It's a very very tenuous.
And remember,
situation to me, and I'm sorry, but you have to think that way with this guy.
And if he's that great, you can franchise him, So I don't think that there is this urgent need to do it right now. I don't.
No, the argument for doing it would be to try to save some money.
Right.
But if you're Talib,
are you going to do that?
I wouldn't, but I don't know what guys do. Rob Ninkovich certainly wanted to take a chance.
If you're the Patriots and you go in there thinking, oh, we're going to get this, deal – you could run the risk of insulting him and kind of sour.
But don't you think
down
that,
the road?
Don't you think Rob Ninkovich could have gotten a lot more if he waited to get to free agency?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
$13 million. Come on.
Do other teams see the value in him that the Patriots do? I don't know.
Then they're blind if they're not watching. Because he's. I mean, is he a great player? No, but he's a very good one.
Paul in Loudonville, did we ever find out how Edelman broke his hand last year? Was it spiking the ball after that touchdown against the Ravens? It was definitely something that happened in the end zone. I don't know if it was specifically spiking the ball.
Yeah, it wasn't spiking the ball. You don't break your hand spiking a ball. But maybe he heard it and then that.
He did something.
Maybe he landed on the hand and then he got up and spiked the ball and
right.
that caused a lot of pain.
Right.
That could have happened. But no, unfortunately, You know how they are around here. We don't get that stuff.
TG and NJ, what happened to Paulie to give him the dislike of small white wide receivers, whether it's Wes Edelman or Amendola? Besides Drew, I'm hard-pressed to think of Paulie getting excited about any Patriots player. You like Tom Brady. Not in the playoffs, but you like him.
I love Brady. Yeah. You know that. Yeah. I love Vince. And what Tlaib has given you in the first month, I just talked about Rob Ninkovich and at length. There's a lot. Believe me, there are more guys on that team that I like, both as players
you like
and
Kevin
people.
Falk.
Loved Kevin Falk.
Yeah, Andy didn't like Kevin Falk.
Yeah, well, Andy called diminishing skills.
Right,
you know,
4 years ago.
Yeah. But you know, Logan Mankins is another one. Richard Seymour. I love those guys. Ty Law, Lawyer Malloy. Rodney, my favorite of all time.
Well, there you go. I mean, you have
man
love.
I can't believe I just got like 15 on the list before I got to Rodney.
The loss of Big Vince is huge, pun intended. The defense will suffer for it. And is Aqib Tlaib the next Rodney Harrison with the chip on the shoulder? Remember when it was the Patriots against the world? We ain't getting it, no respect. It was good fuel for the fire. Are we getting back some of that attitude with Tlaib and the team? And you see Belichick making the same mistake he did with Asante in letting Tlaib walk at the end of the season.
It'd be interesting. See, here's the other part of that. If you remember, Fred, they franchised Asante, remember?
Yeah.
And then he held out.
Right.
And then as part of the agreement to get him to come back, what did they do? They said, we won't franchise you next year.
Right. And then they couldn't. Right.
So then they lost him. So does Tlaib do that?
Yeah.
Does Tlaib hold out?
Yeah.
And then you say, well, it doesn't do me any good that he couldn't go out and sign a contract if he's not playing for me.
True.
You know, so that's why there's layers to this story. It's interesting. And it's a polarizing guy because I think you can make the argument, yeah, I mean, what you saw on the field, if he were Rob Ninkovich and you know, played cornerback the way that Tlaib has played, you'd have no problems giving him a 5-year, $50 million deal. But he's Aqib Tlaib, and he has a laundry list of problems in his past. And you wonder, in this climate, coming off of the situation that they came off of in the offseason with Hernandez, are they willing to do that again with a guy that, you know, that you're not sure of? I think that's a tough one.
Luke and Leicester, good game, good win. Pay Tlaib before he gets injured or arrested. Pump the brakes. Let's wait until he has a down week or two. Buy low, but we need to get him locked up. So he's saying wait. But lock them up. Okay.
Right. Well, you can't do both. You can't wait and get them locked up.
As for the rest of the team, Brady is having one of his most inaccurate seasons in years. The O-line and the running backs look good. After seeing Boyce on that little dump and run, why the F is Blount still returning kickoffs? And Allen look good as well. On Wolfork, I know we just don't know, but an aging 300-pound defensive tackle whose lower body is beginning to go scares me. I think they timed his contract perfectly if next year is his last. Paul, prepare yourself to draft a defensive tackle in the first round. When would they put him on IR?
I don't know about the IR thing. It's
why are they waiting for that?
Well, that's what I asked you, and you told me something about Field Yates that didn't have anything to do with why he's not on IR.
I was talking about finding a replacement. I don't know. I guess until they absolutely know they need the spot, there's no rush to put him on IR, but what's the advantage of not putting, you know? Is it a contract thing? Or
it's not a contract thing. It's, I don't know if they're holding out hope that he could be ready for the playoffs. But I can't imagine.
Jeez.
I can't imagine he could be. But I don't. I really don't know. I mean, I did find it interesting that he had immediate surgery.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, I think that's what you're supposed to do with that injury, and, you know, you're not supposed to walk around on it for 2 weeks like I did.
Tammy in New York, hey, man of PFW and Big Head. I wanted to chime in a little on yesterday's show and defend Tompkins a bit. On yesterday's show, a couple of you guys, namely Big Head and Paul, talked about Tompkins and how his day was just okay and how many balls he double caught. And at first glance, watching the game live on Sunday, I agreed with you guys. But yesterday, I rewatched the game again on NFL Network, and I thought he did better than okay. I thought he was very good, maybe not very, very good, but he was very good. I wouldn't give him very, very good, only because of the two really bad drops he did double catch only one ball that I saw, so he definitely deserves more props than was given for yesterday. But overall, I thought our offense moved the ball at ease, and did whatever they wanted to against the Atlanta defense. I think against Cincinnati's defense, the degree of difficulty increases, and it may be harder to run the ball, but I still think we'll be able to throw it if our receivers can catch it. What do you guys say?
I didn't see it as optimistically as that.
No.
I thought Tompkins was okay. I don't think that he was great. I thought he made some good plays, and I thought he made some not so good plays. I thought the biggest play he made was kind of fluky. The ball that he went through his hands, bounced off the safety's chest, bounced in the air, and he caught on a deflection. Good play by him, but I don't necessarily think that you can rely on that kind of production. In terms of moving the ball with ease, I didn't think either team got stopped all day. I mean, that was kind of obvious. Both teams had over 450 yards of offense. I think the Patriots had about 440 yards, and the Falcons had about 460 yards, but whatever. Let's call it 450. Neither team really punted. I think there were only five total punts in the game. Patriots only got in the red zone three times. They scored once outside the red zone. The Falcons got in the red zone six times. They also scored from outside the red zone. I thought both teams really moved the ball, but not quite as easily as that. I think there was some times where it was, you know, like the third and 19. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's easy.
I think both offenses kind of shot themselves in the foot.
Yes, you know? I agree. I think there were some plays, some negative plays. I thought the offensive line for the Patriots was outstanding. I thought that was the best performance by the offensive line in a long time.
Yep.
Both run blocking and pass blocking. I thought they were able to move the ball. I agree with the emailer. I thought they were able to move the ball, but I don't think it was as easy as he's making it out to be. I think there were some really tough conversions that they made in big spots. And ultimately, they made a couple more of those than Atlanta did. That was the difference in the game.
Dan of Virginia, great to see the Patriots win. I thought it was likely, and it was great to watch the Patriots play this game, Atlanta's last-minute heroics aside. Speaking of which, did Atlanta play their way back into it, or did the Patriots D let their foot off the gas a little? Obviously, Sudfeld's mishandling of the onside kick didn't help matters, not to mention the refs. How does a replay machine malfunction? Are they still using videotape or Betamax, or was it a malfunctioning ref? The refs seem to have been having issues on Sunday night. Yeah, I think the refs didn't have a good game all around.
Bill Belichick still bitching about the refs.
Really?
Today.
That's rare.
Yeah, yeah.
What was he saying?
He was talking about, he was asked a question about Blunt, and the question was something along the lines of, you seem to, the last couple of weeks, have a lot of confidence in LeGarrette Blunt, and he sort of stopped the question and said he's always had confidence in Blunt going back to Philadelphia, the first preseason game, and then sort of said, you know, you can, you know, even on that last third and one run, and you can look at it, what, you know, whether he made it or not, you know, that's one of the best runs we've had all year. And it was clearly, and I'm going to look for it to try to see, okay, the confidence in LeGarrette Blunt seemed to be there the last few weeks. The confidence in him has been there since day one. And he interrupted the question. We saw it in Philadelphia. There's no issue with confidence in LeGarrette, none. Is he giving you what you thought he was capable of? Yeah, I mean, I think he's a good player and he's played well. Let me find the part about the third and one. Okay. I mean, really, I thought that run that he had on the third and one in Atlanta was about as good a run as we've had all year. I don't know about the spot on that one. He did everything he could to get that first down. It was a very close play. Nobody will ever talk about that one, but I think that's as good a run as we've had. I don't know if he gained any yards, but that was a good run. That's saying that he thinks the referees screwed him on the spot.
Oh, sure. I certainly thought he got it on second effort, but, you know, again, without the replay, who knows?
Well, they went to replay.
Oh, I thought
they went to replay and they didn't overturn it.
It was the sideline one that didn't work.
Blandino said that they didn't have enough evidence, anything there on the replay to overturn it. They didn't have the right angle that showed
it
any different.
It's tough because
it was microscopic.
Yeah,
it was absolutely microscopic. And one thing I just want to keep saying is forget the yellow line that you watch because it's not official. It's just not official. I think he probably got it, but it looked to me like he bounced forward. So I don't know exactly where the ball
was. You don't know if it's knee grazed or, you know, anything.
Yeah, like I think, like he landed on a player originally, but then when he bounced forward, I think he was down and slid forward. I don't know. If they had given him the first down, I don't think that Atlanta would have gotten screwed, and I don't think, you know, what they did ended up having screwing the Patriots. It was close.
The ultimate impact of Vince's injury remains to be seen, and it will be interesting to see if this results in a more pass rush oriented emphasis rather than run stopping. My question on Vince's injury is that apparently he has been struggling with something for a little while now. Was the previous niggling injury related to his Achilles? See, that we don't know that. Someone asked that earlier. If so, what's going on with the injury management of the Patriots? Yeah.
Like I said, whatever he had with his foot didn't even cause him to miss any practice time. Not, he wasn't limited in practice. He was a full participant in practice.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that if he had something really bothering him, that would have been the case.
Fred, can you see or hear the NBC feed on the Sunday night broadcast, just so I know for comments on future curse words? In that particular game, I could see it, but my little TV that I set up, because we're indoors, I couldn't get the NBC affiliate.
Really?
Yeah, over the air. So, but a lot of times I'll have the broadcast in my ear, so I will hear what they're broadcasting. And by the way, the potential evacuation due to the fire alarm yesterday has to be the funniest application of Frank's signature phrase, "We'll be fine."
We'll be fine. It was great.
We've had a lot of problems technically lately.
Yeah, what's going on?
Today, the firewall to our internet kept rebooting itself.
Really?
Yeah.
That was the issue?
Yeah.
What else is going on?
Nothing.
Just this.
Yeah. Let's see. Who's this now?
I need another Pepsi.
Kingsley?
Oh, look at that. Kevin's getting it for me.
Yeah, I'll have one too. I thought he left to get food.
I think they're bringing a pizza down.
Bringing it down?
Yeah.
Are they bringing food down? Could I have something too, please?
Don't waste a Diet Pepsi on him now.
No. I don't care. Water. You got Sprite?
Nope.
Kingsley says, greetings, journeyman listener, chiming in a few topics. Fred, I agree with you. Edelman has proven to be better than he was last year. He is more effective with his targets and has produced with his opportunities, something that you couldn't say the past years he has been with us. Granted, his health might be brought into question, but you can question the health about anybody on this team right now. Nobody has been healthy. And believe me,
Nobody's been healthy on the Patriots?
And believe me, I've been an Edelman hater for years. There's no way you can't give him his props for what he's done so far. His production has been comparable to the great Wes Welker.
Well, that makes sense. You've been an Edelman hater.
And he wasn't even supposed to
be. So that's
to
why
be.
You think he's good now, because you used to hate him.
He said he hated Edelman.
Yeah, he used to hate him.
And he wasn't even supposed to be his direct replacement coming into the season. I'm also with you on the wide receiver depth. Paul and Andy seem to forget that they are rookies being forced into the system.
No, that's exactly why I don't think they have a lot of depth.
And they have shown steady improvement with the opportunities. Drops aside, you are seeing the weekly improvement. And the way things are trending, I can say that they are poised to be better than last year, granted Amendola and Gronk return healthy and close to 100%. Okay.
Was Dobson better or worse than he was in the previous game, Sunday night?
Neutral.
Fred, come on.
Well, he didn't have as many opportunities.
So he wasn't as good.
Yeah. So he didn't, but he wasn't bad. And that one play in the end zone, he was held.
All I'm saying is that this whole steady improvement, when you have three rookies, you know what's going to happen? Some games they're going to look good. Some games they're not.
Yeah.
They're going to be up and down. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying cut these three guys. They don't belong in the team. But to say that they're better than Brandon Lloyd, I'm sorry. I hate Brandon Lloyd. I think he sucked last year. But three rookies are not better than Brandon Lloyd.
Pat and Agawam, good afternoon, crew. Addition by addition, eh, Fred? One more reason why this is the best web radio show podcast on the planet, Fred's metaphors. Just joking. I'll have to agree with him on this one, though. On the surface, the talent level of last year's receiving squad may have been better than this year, but this team will have better depth once Gronk and D.A. come back. I do think that Tompkins and Dobson will continue to improve over the course of the season. My only concern with that is when Gronk and D.A. do come back, will Brady give the young guys enough opportunities to grow?
Well, then they don't have enough depth then.
I'd hate to see them regress because he's too locked in and reliant on those two. I think the offense has a chance to be real good by the end of the year if he gives the young guys ample opportunity if they stay relatively healthy. Not as good as Denver's going right now, but pretty darn good. My question of the week is, do you see them filling Wilfork's spot internally or possibly trading for a disgruntled veteran? I can't think of anyone good in the final year of their contract playing for a crappy team, and I think I heard someone propose on Felger and Maz them trading for Gerald McCoy, seeing how Belichick and Schiano are buds. I don't know if he's still playing under his rookie contract or if he signed an extension, but I'd like your guys' opinion on this one. If he's playing under his rookie deal, I'd like it.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah.
Throw them all in. Let's see if we can trade from a Robert Wilkerson too.
Well, there was a trade that just went down.
I mean, I understand that Tampa Bay is basically just handing you anybody that they want, but I mean, to just automatically assume that you're going to get all their good players for nothing, isn't that a little bit, you know, unrealistic? Gerald McCoy? I mean, that's typical Felger and Maz. Oh, I heard this name, Gerald McCoy. Maybe we can get him.
Last but not least, my revised Super Bowl 48 matchup, Cleveland versus Minnesota in a battle of former Brady backup QBs, with Cleveland edging it out on a last-second 50-yard Billy Kunda field goal through the driving snow in the Meadowlands, which will trump Vinatieri's kick against the Raiders as the greatest kick in NFL history, and dealing Minnesota its record fifth Super Bowl loss and ending the long suffering of all Cleveland sports fans.
Cleveland.
Boy, Cleveland versus Minnesota.
You know, I'm just thinking, could there possibly be a matchup in the Super Bowl that I wouldn't want to watch?
Right.
Yeah. That'd be close. I mean, I guess exactly what the emailer said would be the reason why I would watch. I would watch to see Hoyer and Castle. But, boy, there's two teams I care nothing at all about.
Swede in London. I've been watching NFL games for 4 years now, and I have a question. What is the strategy on kickoffs in general? What is the kicking team trying to achieve? And I don't mean on special situations such as onside kicks. Do teams always try to kick the ball so far back that the other team does not try to return it? Or are there different strategies between teams? It's a reasonable question.
It is. I think in general, that when they move the kickoff up 5 yards, that the goal is a touchback. I think most teams feel like their kickers can record touchbacks, and you see it. I think Gostkowski has only had two returned kicks so far this year. Their opponents, the Patriots, haven't had very many more than that. In terms of Blunt getting chances to return them.
But see, you know,
there are times, I think, when the clock is such that you might kick it as high as you can and just get down and cover it and try to trap them, you know, say inside the 15.
Right. But I was always thinking that now that the kickoff is closer, that means it takes the coverage guys less time to get down there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a bad returner, why not take a shot at, you know, like you said, putting it up high, getting it inside the 10 somewhere, and just covering it.
See if you can get down and cover it and get them inside the 15.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know?
I think the teams are generally afraid of that.
Yeah.
Because they look at it and say, I know if I just kick it out of the end zone, they're going to start at the 20.
Right.
But you're right. I think I would think there'd be a little bit more strategy involved than I've seen.
Peter in Ottawa, first time, last time. Please stop eating or chewing when you do the podcast. Also, turn down Andy's mic when he rants. It's way too loud. I've been trying to live through it, but I can't take it. So,
see ya. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
No, the eating, chewing in the mic, that,
yeah,
can, you know, definitely.
Whatever.
Well, it is annoying. It doesn't
happen very often.
It does.
First of all,
I think it does.
I don't think it does. And it's lunchtime.
I know, but you just turn off your mic.
I do.
Chewing. Yeah, we can do a better job there.
Yeah,
I think.
Whatever.
Don't you think?
No.
No, you don't think so? Wow.
I think we could do a better job of not yelling at each other all the time. But
well, that's okay. People like that. Harley writes in, and he says, if Bill is building his defense for the retirement of Brady, is it possible to make some moves and get Clowney out of USC next year? He's not out of USC.
South Carolina.
South Carolina. Now that Clowney has tainted his draft pick, I'm a big Patriots fan out of South Carolina, but I played against Clowney in high school, and his email just ends. Doesn't go any further.
I haven't looked at any draft stuff at all for next year, but I can't imagine him not being a top five pick.
What is going on with him, though? He's not really the highlight reel everyone thought he was going to be this year.
I don't know.
Are people just triple-teaming him and taking him?
I haven't watched
game?
Every game. I know that the first game there was questions about his motor and whether or not he was trying. His, yeah.
I mean, like I said,
if I were him, I wouldn't be.
No.
I certainly wouldn't be going all out every play, you know, going pedal to the metal. I'd be on my mind every snap.
About getting hurt?
Yeah. Yeah. Look at that. You know, a kid from St. John's Prep, Johnny Thomas, great running back, up my way.
He just got hurt.
Yeah, he just tore his ACL.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to Maryland next year. Football, you know.
Yep. He had a great interception return.
Yeah.
For a 107-yard touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, tore his ACL against Everett.
Oh, that's terrible.
But, you know, if you're Clowney and you have that kind of money, I don't know.
But the premise there that...
I'm not suggesting that he should be tanking it. That's not what I'm saying, but it's hard.
The premise, though, that is building his defense for when Brady leaves. No, he's not doing that.
This is what he's been trying to do for years.
You know, it's nothing
in
to
2007,
do with... It's nothing to do with when Brady leaves.
In 2007, they had an aging defense that still had some proud veterans like Seymour and Bruschi, Vrabel. You know, they still had some pieces in place, Harrison. Those guys have left, and it's taken him a while to replace them. I'm not even sure that he's done it yet, but he's been trying to do it for a long time, right?
Sure.
I mean, look at all the draft picks they've spent in the top three rounds on defensive players in the last 5 years. You know, the defensive backs, you know, the Merriweather and Will Hite and Wheatley and Butler and Chung, Dowling. That's a lot of defensive backs with top picks.
Chris with the TIN writes in, there has been some great discussions / debates on this show. Yesterday's was certainly on the list. Fred was obviously referencing the Star Wars when defining journeyman. There are always two, Fred, a master and an apprentice. Journeyman is like Boba Fett in the Star Wars universe. Forget that fact that you all were discussing sports here, Frederick. That has no bearing. Stop laughing, Fathead, in the portly one. I hear you over there. Has Eric come by later? If so, hello. Eric will be by. Yeah, I might have been thinking of Star Wars.
Oh, really?
I always am.
Is that a Star Wars thing?
Well, they have the master and the apprentice, you know. And when he's talking about there's always two, he's talking about the there's a name for that. I forget. The Sith. There's always two.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't speak geek.
Sven from Sweden. what are the chances that the Patriots re-sign Kyle Love? Zero. Right?
I wouldn't think. Speaking of former Patriots, Jermaine Cunningham signed with San Francisco.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yes, according to Adam Schefter.
What, he must be okay now, physically, maybe? I don't know.
Well, they didn't put him on IR. They released him.
No, I know, but he had an injury. He was having trouble getting on the field.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that's been his whole career.
Right. It's too bad. I mean, he flashed that 1 year, and then he got nailed with the performing-enhancing drug, and that was it. You know, never really, but I think he was on an upward trajectory up to that point. It's too bad. You're not even going to partake in
it. I don't think he ever flashed. I don't think he ever did one damn thing in a Patriots uniform. I think he was a waste of a second-round pick.
Ray.
I mean, to say he never made a tackle, okay, he probably made a tackle at some point. He probably had a sack. I don't think, you know, when everybody was getting excited about him, I didn't see it. I didn't see these monster plays that he was making from the defensive tackle position. Like, you know, last year at this time, people were talking about the NASCAR front, and I didn't see him making an impact. He made a couple of plays.
Do you think that Brady kid will ever, you know, live a...
Come on.
Oh.
Now, how disrespectful is that to Brady, that you just said Jermaine Cunningham, and then you said, how about Brady?
Well, I'm just, you know, you're tough. You're
how
tough
disrespectful.
On these guys. You're tough on these guys.
Yeah, no, I expect greatness. I have been working for this organization, and they go to the Super Bowl every other year on average. So, yeah, I am tough.
With average players, apparently.
You have a great quarterback, though, and a great coach.
Ray in Stratford, Connecticut. There are many people that are overstating the effectiveness of our offense. Yes, I agree it was great to come out of there with a win, but Atlanta is not the big physical type team like some of the other teams out there like Detroit. when our receivers can get pushed around a bit at the line of scrimmage and still get off the line and make a play, then I would feel the confidence starting to surge. Would you agree? You know,
I'm a little in between. I think that's, you know, that's probably a little Andy Paul negative as opposed to Fred Rosie, but I'm probably in between. I don't think the offense is a work in progress. With Gronk out, it's going to be that way until he gets back. Then we get a chance to see. But I get what you're saying. That was not a very good defense they played the other night. And not only it wasn't a good defense when healthy, they were missing several guys that are important. But that said, I don't care what it takes to get to 30. They scored 30 points and they put up 400-plus yards of offense. That was a good offensive night.
Also, do you feel that Boyce will get more opportunities this week? I just want to see him with a little more game action. I agree with your opinions on Tompkins and Dobson. Also, can you explain a little better on the non-flag for the fair catch where a receiver called for fair catch and got leveled?
He got hit. The receiver was knocked into the defender.
That's what they say.
Yeah, well, that's what happened. McCourty, he was getting blocked by McCourty, and he ended up making contact with Edelman. I mean, that is what happened.
Well, that's what they say. I heard
that's
that,
not what they say. That's what happened.
I heard that he got hit by McCourty, but he actually lowered his shoulder into.
He did lower his shoulder to protect himself.
Yeah. What was the other thing? Boyce, more opportunities.
I think Boyce should get more opportunities
in the open field. Try to free him up a little bit. Those little swing passes, maybe an end around.
I want him down the field.
Yeah. And also, screw the Jets. I love Geno's around the back fumble. Did you see that?
Yeah.
What's he think? He's playing basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I know he's getting a lot of he turns the ball over too much. I mean, that's pretty obvious. But I think he was trying to protect. He was going to lose the ball because the ball was extended from his body in his hand, in his right hand, and there was no way he was going to hold on to that ball. And he was trying to protect it by going behind the back. It didn't work.
What are you going to do, land on it?
It didn't work. Yeah. No, he was trying to put it in his left hand.
Yeah.
And then as he did it, the guy knocked him down further and knocked the ball loose. It looked like another butt fumble. He turns the ball over too much, man. He's overwhelmed.
I love it. Did you know, Paul, that AFC
Probably
East
not.
Is the only division with no team with a losing record?
So you're upset about that?
No, it's kind of cool. It's not going to last.
No, but you hate the Jets, so you hate the fact that they don't have a losing record.
No, well, I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, they're going to lose this week.
All right, so why bring it up then?
But just a little fun fact. It's just a fun fact, Paul.
But you're upset about it because the Jets aren't.
I'm not upset about it.
Because the Jets don't have a losing record.
It's simply
that
a bothers, fun fact.
That bothers you.
No, not at all, because I know they stink and they're going down.
Yeah,
so
they do.
I'm not worried one
Go
bit about the Jets.
What'd you think of the Miami game the other night? What'd you think of Miami?
I think that I didn't see the second half. So I think they put up a fight early.
I kind of agree with you. You know, I know Andy's like on this rant where everybody – you can't say anything about anybody. Everybody sucks, right? So you can't really – Andy's right now, he's – I don't know if he's like off a coffee or something, but he's been in a bit of a mood.
Oh, yeah.
Everything
– Very argumentative.
Everything and everybody sucks.
Yep.
I didn't think Miami got outclassed in that game the way the score indicated. I thought the huge, huge play – And there's another quarterback, by the way, that turns the ball over too much. Tannehill's going to have to protect the ball better.
Or as Keyshawn Johnson calls him, Tannehill.
A lot of people were calling him Tannehill. I'm almost wondering if I've been pronouncing it wrong.
I thought it was Tannehill.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. But everybody's been calling him Tannehill, and I'm wondering if maybe we're doing it wrong.
Maybe.
That interception that he threw at the end of the half, did you watch the whole first half?
Pretty much,
It's 14-10, and they got the ball, and they got a nice drive going. He throws a quick slant, and you can't throw a pick on a slant. If the guy's not – you can't let the guy – once the guy gets inside the receiver, you can't do that. And that ends up setting up New Orleans. Instead of – at the very least, they should have gotten within one, but I think they had plenty of time to take the lead at the half. And then he throws that pick. The Saints take that and get a touchdown to close the half. It's 21-10. Miami's one last shot to get back in the game. They come out and they don't move, and then it's 28-10. Game over.
Right.
At that point. But I thought – You know, from that point, they were playing a pretty good road game.
And like you said, road game, and it's particularly tough in that dome.
And once they get it rolling, like, listen, the Saints are pretty good.
Yeah.
The Saints are pretty good. I don't think they're great, but they're pretty good. And I think Miami got in a hole on the road against a pretty good team, and it snowballed on them, and they're not ready for that yet. But I think, you know, a lot of people, I think the knee-jerk thing is to say, see, you know, Miami's who we thought they were. And maybe they will be.
No.
Maybe they will be. But I'm not ready to say that yet. I thought they played competitively for a good portion of that game the other night.
Let me tell you something. What happened to Miami in New Orleans could easily happen to the Patriots in New Orleans.
By the way, it did happen to the Patriots in New Orleans in 2009. Right. Same kind of game.
So much so that they took Brady out of the game. You know,
it was the same kind of game.
Yep.
It was competitive for a little while, and all of a sudden New Orleans got a rolling, and they didn't do anything about it.
Robin in Alaska says, Fred, in point-counterpoint on Patriots All Access, I've never seen Christian Fourier side with your point. Usually Fourier calls out who he sides with, saying something like, I'm going with Andy on this one. This week, when Fourier had the same opinion as you, he still didn't side with you. He just made it his own talking point. Is something going on there? I'm sensing a story time with Fred Kirsch segment.
Fred?
There's no doubt that Christian Fourier has it out for me on that show and sides with Andy just out of spite. I think I might have badmouthed him once.
Did you really?
I think so. To his face, but, you know, I think so. He always sides with Andy no matter what. And like you said, Robin, I think this week there was no doubt I was right, but. You know, he just can't admit it. So that's a common theme on that show.
Not admitting that you're wrong?
Well, I think, you know, Andy played football in college, and I didn't. So, you know, Christian thinks he
did. He really, though?
Well,
come on.
At Division III, NESCAC, you know.
NESCAC. It's an academic conference.
It is.
Yeah. How he was part of it, I'll never know. But
let's see. Nore from San Francisco Bay Area. I don't think that I've ever got an email from you before. I was wondering how you feel about the offensive line of the Patriots holding up against the defensive line of the Bengals. The Bengals have a very athletic defensive front that knows how to get to the quarterback effectively. Their linebackers are very good as well and can stop the run as well as cover in the middle of the field. Overall, their front seven is what concerns me, and their D-line can put pressure on Brady, giving him very little to no time to throw the ball. Any thoughts on this? I also want to give a shout-out to the PFW Elite group on Facebook, Nore from the San Francisco Bay Area. Well, we're going to take a break, but we'll talk about
Before we take a break, I just give you, on Twitter here,
yes.
Looking at some of the comments, I figured the locker room was in full swing. Gronk speaking. Karen Garigian, looks like Mike Reese, similar. Rob Gronkowski said the team wasn't pressuring him to play. Everyone was on the same page. He'll play when, quote, I'm ready to play.
Said they're not pressuring me means that someone asked him to address it from the team, I think. I think he was told.
Andy, I can't wait to get out there and play football, answer questions about football. Right. Andy says that's, you know, something from Gronk.
Right.
I think that's interesting.
All right, we'll talk about that as well when we come back.
The word offseason doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call Star NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether the sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. 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 Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance? You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios Triple Play Online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, great moments in PFW in Progress history.
From the photos Andy was telling me about.
No. Unlike the rest of the world, I didn't clamor to go see Brett Favre's junk when it was available online. I still have not seen his junk, just like I haven't seen Greg Oden's. I don't seek out male penises.
See?
Unlike some men in this world.
Couldn't agree with him more. I've never seen one of those photos.
But I like breasts. But they said Jen Sturger photos available, see why Favre was after her.
But
online, I'd be dialing it up
tonight.
Matter of
fact, I have done that.
I like breasts. I'm passionate about breasts.
I think that's really funny, though. Why would you ever do like a Google search on Greg Oden's junk?
Right.
Did you see Brett Favre's?
Yes.
Did you see Brandon Spikes?
Yes.
I don't get that. I don't know why you would want to see
just
that.
Watching it.
That's another great moment from PFW in Progress.
All right, back here in PFW in Progress, web radio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500 is the toll-free number. Before we took the break, we talked about some stuff that was coming out of the locker room, and just as we went to the break, Andy returned from the locker room so we can get it right from the fathead's mouth.
I don't think I care for that introduction.
But tell us what happened in the locker room, because there was some stuff that came out today.
Well, yeah, I mean, as much as stuff comes out of that locker room,
relatively speaking.
You know, Gronk spoke, as has been the case the last few weeks. The reporters just surrounded his locker, waiting for him to come out. They were all stationed, all the cameramen on their little stools, waiting for him. He came out, and he was asked the very first important question, what he thought of the government shutdown, which he said he couldn't answer because it's not football-related. But then he said everything you'd expect him to say. You know, we're on this. Yes, we're on the same page. We have been since the beginning, and we still are. When he's ready to play, when it clicks, he'll play. He said he's just going day by day a million different ways and going to see which strength muscles he can work today. I don't really know what that means, if you take it at face value or if he's just talking because he's Rob Gronkowski and it didn't come out perfectly correctly.
To me, that's a lot. To see what strength muscles I can play. That means that, you know, strength and getting back to, you know, full strength is the
But I think
issue.
That's obvious. And he's not getting back to full strength. It's just not going to happen.
Eventually it will.
Not really.
Never?
I mean, I guess in theory, but he's young enough so where he should technically be making some gains in the offseason. Minor, you know, 5% gains, 10% gains, whatever. And he lost all that, so he has to work ridiculously hard to get back to zero before he can even get back to where he could have been gaining this offseason.
Yeah.
So to think he's going to be at full strength or whatever full strength would have been with a normal offseason is naive. It's just unlikely to really happen. He needs to get back to where he's comfortable, and that's what I took from this, is he made a comment about he felt like a rookie when he first started practicing. He was surprised by the speed and how everything was just
right.
Moving. And that was, I think, interesting. You know, we all assume, you know, it's hard to just, you know, miss all the practices and hit the ground running. You know, there's not a lot. Logan Mankins is a rare breed to just walk off the street onto the field in Cleveland and play.
He played a lot that day.
That's not easy to do. Yeah. And Gronk admitted that, and I found that interesting. Now, but he poo-pooed any of the division camps. Right. He poo-pooed all that stuff.
You mentioned the word click when things click. Did he use that word?
Click was the word. When he clicks, it clicks. Or,
so
you
that's
know,
interesting.
Or you know when it clicks.
Yeah,
or whatever.
So that's interesting.
He basically said, you know, the vague thing we've saying. When he's ready, he's ready. He used that phrase, but he used click. It's not a specific thing, right? And he didn't say he wasn't ready. He said he's not sure. You know, and basically he continues to say he's ready for every day. Will he be ready for Sunday kind of thing? He's right. Ready for every day of progress, day by day.
Right. Anything to go along with the story from the Herald that On the Mandola will play?
No, he came in, and while I was in there, he was doing a one-on-one on a radio interview. He was walking around fine. I mean, I stared at his groin like Paul taught me to last week.
I told you I was really studying his groin to see if I could find out what the
injury
was.
It's not like he was dragging a leg or anything. So, I mean, it was good to just see him walking around basically like a normal human being.
Well, Eric will be the judge of whether he had a gait, a different gait.
Eric knows
gait.
That's
gait.
Anything? You also talked with Ninkovich.
I talked with Ninkovich. The news I will take out of that, I'll give you a little snippet that I considered news. You can watch it Thursday night, 7:30 Comcast. But he said Big V will be in the building, so it's not like we're losing that aspect. So he tends to think he's going to be around the team quite a bit.
So he will.
So, and, you know, that was Paul's greatest fear, is the leadership, the off the field.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I just
Walking
wonder how
in
much.
That bathrobe.
Yeah, I
limping.
I think it helps to have him around. And Fred, you brought that up earlier in the show, but my only reservation with that is I don't know if you're as effective the way, like, I think part of it is, you know, in the huddle, you know, keeping everything together when, you know, the poop's hitting the fan, having a steady hand like that in the huddle. And I think that's, he's going to be missed, but yeah. It's good news to hear that yeah. Rob says he's going to be around.
Okay. What else? Who else was,
Marcus Forston, I was not in on, but he had a good gathering around him. I think people are assuming he's going to be promoted to the active roster. He is not as of yet. Vince is not on IR as of yet.
No. We talked about that, too.
Why do you think that is, Andy?
I have no idea.
No?
I don't even pretend to understand some of the things this team does. I don't know.
Do you think that there's even a remote possibility that they're going to try to wait to see if they could possibly get him back?
If they make the playoffs or something? Huh?
No?
Not even a 1% possibility.
As Bill Belichick would say, I think that would be the most irresponsible thing I've ever heard of. I don't think there's any shot in hell Vince Wilfork could come back and protect himself and compete enough on an NFL level from this injury in January. We're in freaking October.
Well, we're trying to figure out why they just haven't.
I mean, you're talking about 3 months. You expect a 300 and, well, Ninkovich said 40 pounds, and I said plus, and he said, yeah, probably. a 340-plus pound, 30-something-year-old, trying to come back from a torn. Now, we don't know specifically whether it was completely, partially.
I don't
know the specific injury.
Doesn't matter.
And,
come back in
Suggs did not rupture his. It was a partial tear.
I know, but it was.
And he came back.
But it was a lot longer than 3 months.
Right. No, I know. And he's also a smaller, younger. I think that matters. I think even attempting to put him back out there would make putting Rob Gronkowski out there as the safest decision they ever made back in January.
Hey, Eric.
I think that would be, again, to steal Bill's word, irresponsible.
So then what other reason would
I think it's going to happen like today. I think we're making a mountain out of a molehill here.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think it's going to happen immediately.
I just I brought it up just I don't believe, before you think I'm arguing with you, because I know you're on edge. I told everybody.
You feel a little edgy right now.
You've been on edge a lot lately. I'm not arguing with you at all. I think there's no chance.
I mean,
zero,
how many guys are we going to carry that are just hurt? Slater and Wilfork and Gronkowski and Amendola. I mean, we're going to go to games with like 40 people from now on?
No, 45.
45. Just all are hurt.
We also talked about that too.
We got Cole back.
Right.
He's got a cake in front of his locker.
Oh, so it's
SpongeBob cake?
I just assumed it was like a welcome back cake. He ate like a quarter of it. He took a Perillo-like slice out of it by the looks.
And you know who else is here? Eric is here.
Hey, Freddie.
Now, Eric, you were also at Bill Belichick and Tom Brady.
Correct.
Anything out of there of note?
I thought Bill had some pretty good quotes today for almost every question.
Yeah. Ripping the officials unsolicited.
Kind of, taking a shot at the whole first down carry that was taken away.
I like
replay
that.
Showed that it was, you know, you read between those lines. I think he felt the same way all the rest of us
absolutely
did.
He thought he got the first down. But what I like about it, as you guys know, is any opportunity to rip the officials.
Yeah.
Hands up, baby. I love it.
But he had, you know, aside from the great things he had to say about Geno Atkins, would be the first pick overall if he was redrafted.
Yeah, what draft was that? 5 years ago? 4 years?
Who
was?
So Florida you didn't State. Have to put it in quotes. That could have been your opinion that it was a steal, fourth round steal.
2009 was when Dunlap came out, right? Dunlap and Cunningham.
Yeah, but who was the number one pick?
Oh,
like who are we saying he would now be ahead of?
2009, I think was
Bradford.
Was it Bradford?
Might have been.
Was that Bradford?
Might have been Bradford's year.
But anyway, he had some good quotes about him, about Devlin and his development and LeGarrette Blount. He was really adamant about Blount. Like somebody started a line of questioning.
We read that, yeah.
About confidence. Yeah, thank you. And he stopped him,
You know who asked the
before
question?
He could finish the question.
Witt.
It was Witt, actually.
And am I to assume, based on his answers on the kick return, that anybody who can run the football as a running back should be a good kick returner? Because that's certainly how he makes it sound. Right?
I suppose you could.
I mean, we've all seen him carry the football. Blah, 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 blah. And when he does it on kick returns, it's not productive. And you know what else happens? When you're a running back, you get a first down, a second down, and a third down. So it's okay if you get 2 yards on first down. You can come back and have 47 on second down.
Right.
If you get 2 yards on your kick return in this league, in this day and age, you may not get another one. And that's basically what it's been.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody playing the role of
I'm on edge.
Not really.
No,
there was no tough guy questions today.
Yeah.
Brady, I thought, was pretty good about Tompkins and just his ability to
catch the ball bouncing off safety shoulders after it already went through your hands.
No,
this
but
is the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. He needs French vanilla for him, please, with a lot of sugars.
No,
he needs to calm down.
No, but I don't think that's the answer.
Questioning about, you know, coming back from a drop, you know, serious, really bad play, and then and turning around one or two plays later and making a tremendous play, and how that has
got a lot of experience at it.
He can't help himself.
I know
it's pathological.
Brady was really good about how he's really starting to trust Tompkins out on the field, which for a rookie, especially for a rookie at that position on this team, where as we all know they haven't had much success in recent drafts, and this is a guy who wasn't even drafted. I thought that was some pretty high praise from Brady.
Great.
I'll tell you what I'm concerned about with that whole depth thing that we argued about earlier in the show.
If he
related
trusts
to that.
Tompkins so much, why does he keep saying, I can't wait till we have all our weapons back and then we're actually not really defendable?
Well, that's part of it. He's been very contradictory in his comments
lately.
Well,
but you can still be complimentary about a player and still want other better players to be on the field.
And I would say that...
He's not saying that that Tompkins is way better than Gronk and Amendola. He's just saying he's making good progress. I'm beginning to trust him.
Yeah, my concern would be,
to trust.
What does he do if he has Gronk and Amendola to choose from with Edelman when Tompkins drops one?
Well, that was kind of... Yeah, my mic's on. That was kind of what one of the emailers said, is he hopes that when these guys come back, he doesn't...
No, but what I'm saying, we're sitting there saying how great the performance was when he's catching every other pass thrown his way.
I know what you're saying.
And a lot of the incompletions are dropped.
Thrown his way.
A lot of the incompletions are drops.
And it was Edelman, him, and then 2-1-1-1-1-1-1. You know, Ridley was the only other guy, and then there was nothing. It was those two that he had to throw to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he could choose not to at some point if he's going to be 50% reception.
Speaking of Amendola, I thought he looked the best that I've seen him. What?
No, I said he thought he looked fine, and Fred goes, well, we'll wait to see what Eric thinks of his gait. Because you have become the gait analysis.
Well,
keeper of the gate.
Gatekeeper?
Right.
That's gate.
He's unbelievable.
He looked better than... He certainly does look better than last week, and last week was better than the week before. The gait is getting less and less hitch-like.
Yeah.
He's looking more and more natural to me.
Good.
So, yeah, I thought he looked relatively natural today. Did he speak? I saw him on the phone. Okay.
Yes,
he
did.
He's doing well.
And he said, you know, someone asked
him
about...
So that's a big improvement than last week then, because he did not have anything close to a natural gait.
He looks much better.
He definitely looks better. I can still see a little bit there on the field when he's doing, you know, especially when he has to, like, cut or, you know, do something more planting hard. Mm. You can still kind of see that it's there, but it's certainly way better than it was a couple of weeks ago. So I think there's a better chance than not that he plays this
week.
And
whatever the injury is, unless the medical staff are just a bunch of quacks, then they're saying being out there running, planting is not going to hurt it. It's not the type of injury where you have to get off your feet and rest, and that's the only thing that's going to help it.
Right. Well, I'm sure getting off his feet would help.
I don't know.
But
we just don't
know.
Well, we don't know. But
if that's the case, then he's not doing the right thing.
Why do you go so super literal with everything?
It's true, though.
Well, then why didn't he play 3 weeks ago?
But he was still out at practice.
No, but what I'm saying is he should have played then.
If
obviously he couldn't.
If
it's gotten better, is my point, by resting.
If it was the type of injury that you have to get off your feet in order to get better,
then he wouldn't be making progress.
He certainly hasn't been doing that.
Right, and he wouldn't be making progress from what we see.
Exactly.
But virtually any injury... The best way to heal it is
not
inactivity.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I could make an argument that if they had just rested it for the last 2 weeks, he'd be fine now.
Right.
He maybe wouldn't be able to play last week.
25 guys in that locker room would be better off next week if they didn't do a damn thing all week.
Which is why the bye week is always so important.
But you also have games to play, and you weigh activity, inactivity.
Yeah, I heard our boy Ninko, who does a radio interview on one of the local stations. It's not one of the sports stations. And they asked him about, you know, it's... I think it was yesterday morning. You know, it's Tuesday morning, and, you know, you're coming off that game. How long is it before you're feeling right? And he goes, well, you know, you're still pretty banged up from a game, and, you know, maybe by tomorrow, you know, probably Thursday morning, you're feeling pretty good. And then they laughed, and they go, and then you just got to get beat up again on Sunday. He goes, well, yeah, that's the way it goes.
Or if you're not lucky, Thursday night, if you have a Thursday night game. Just a little insider. He had these big... poofs of cotton or whatever in his locker. And
you should see Andy's hands while he's doing
No, but it's like
it's
almost
like dough above his head.
Like as he's massaging the grapes?
Right.
Almost like a Santa beard, like these big poofs of cotton. And we were like, is it okay if we do the interview right in front of that? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's just for my feet. And there was one of those little sponges, and I thought he meant for like a pedicure or something. And I go, what? A pedicure? And he goes, no. I jam it in the front of my cleats because my toes get all effed up. If I don't, because like when you plant and these hard jerky motions, they get mashed up. So he jams cotton in the front of his cleats.
Sounds like he needs
to. So does he wear bigger cleats?
Yeah, or he needs to wear shoes.
I didn't really get in depth into it, but it sounded weird to me too.
Sounds like he's a size 12 and he's wearing 11 and a half.
Yeah. Right. Or maybe he wears a 12 because he wants room for the
sliding
cotton.
Doing the old Doug Gottlieb. Know. Remember when he used to wear like two sizes too small when he played for Oklahoma
State?
Really?
What was the reason for that?
He said it. I don't know, like it made him concentrate more or something. I forgot, but he used to wear like
He bound his feet, essentially.
Basically, yeah. He's cutting off the circulation.
It's like me when I don't pee before I leave on an overnight. It keeps me awake if I feel like I have to pee on the ride home.
He's an odd duck, that Doug Gottlieb.
Discomfort is a real motivator.
I'm Doug Gottlieb.
Toby from New York says, longtime listener, big fan. You guys are a blast. I have 2 points. One, I wish you would get on Paul Moore for his enlightened suggestion that you don't need to run the ball in the NFL. While you don't
take it super literally. Why is everybody so on semantics?
While you don't necessarily need to run the ball on every down, you must be able to at least run the ball enough to make the defense respect it. Case in point is what's happening this year. Giants and Steelers are both 0-4, despite having above-average quarterbacks and wide receivers.
Whoa.
They both have problems getting anything done on offense. The
Steelers have no wide receivers at all.
Bad offensive line.
I'd argue the Giants don't have an above-average quarterback right now.
Meanwhile, the Seahawks and Patriots are 4-0, and guess what? They both have great offensive lines and running games. In conclusion, my obvious point is after your QB, the most important thing to have in the NFL is an offensive line, in other words, a running game.
Who are the two teams that – I'm sorry, Andy was making fun of everybody. Who is the two teams that have outstanding running backs and offensive lines?
Seahawks and Patriots.
Oh. The Seahawks have an outstanding offensive line,
that's
huh?
what he says.
Yeah. Okay. Malden Hayes, Breno Giacomini.
Two.
So he couldn't have been good.
It's not a good offensive line.
Tom Brady
line.
Went to high school somewhere. Like you have to.
Seattle's not considered to have a very good offensive line.
They have a very good running back.
And last week we got more emails about ripping our offensive line than we got praising it. Now they happen to have a phenomenal performance in Atlanta. Now we have a great offensive line.
How do the Jaguars get away with playing Blaine Gabbert? I had money on the Jaguars this week and almost threw up watching the man play. It's so obvious that he has no idea what he's doing, yet the Jaguars stroll him out game after game. The only time they ever score points is when he gets injured and Chad Henne plays.
They didn't score any points with Chad Henne either.
I can't help but feel that Mustachio, the owner, is behind this and he has some diabolical plan. I'm just not sure what it is. What do you guys think?
I think that you really need to check yourself into Gamblers Anonymous if you're betting on Jacksonville.
Yeah.
That's a problem. I'm sorry.
They don't have. I mean, what do they
You're
have?
Betting on Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't there something wrong with that? Which, by the way, did you happen to see that? I believe. Is it Seattle? Denver is hosting Jacksonville. Not this week, but next week.
Oh.
And right now, Vegas has it as 28 points. And now things can change, you know. Yeah. Something happens.
Manning goes down.
Something happens in the game this week, but that would be the biggest spread.
Other than college,
ever.
What's the
well? They're on pace. The
biggest one ever.
Broncos are on pace.
So that
to
would
break
be it in the NFL. Biggest one ever.
The Broncos are on pace to break the Patriots scoring record, and the Jaguars are on pace to break the Lions' lack of scoring record. So right. It makes sense that it would be the biggest spread in NFL history.
Wow. Yeah.
Was the Lions 0-16? That's the lowest scoring team of all time as well.
It was the Lions, I believe. It was the 0-16 team.
That's interesting.
Now, it's closer.
It's funny how
the Broncos
that works. You can't score, you can't win.
Right. The Broncos are on pace to obliterate the Patriots' record. It's like 128 points that they're going to beat it by. That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
It's a little closer.
I might have to start hoping for an injury. Oh. That was good.
Wait a minute. Like, he hasn't already been doing that. And by the way.
You know you're rooting for Welker to get hurt.
No, not Welker.
No, Manning.
Penis no, I
Manning.
Just think Welker in general. Now he's adding. Because
did you watch the Manning?
Well, you know, if they remove Welker, they're still going to score
exactly.
a billion points.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Not Welker.
Did you watch the Manning documentary
no.
last week?
No.
Fantastic.
It was pretty good, yeah.
I can't believe you didn't watch it just to make fun of him.
I didn't. Actually, I have not watched one of those football lives.
It wasn't a football life.
Oh, it wasn't?
No, it was an SEC storied.
Oh.
Which doesn't make any sense. Right?
Well,
they're called SEC storied.
Well, the SEC
the storied
is a
story
history.
Yes.
It doesn't make any sense. It's stupid.
Well, they're telling a story, and the conference
about a storied conference
is storied.
It's in the past.
You don't think that's an odd phrase, SEC storied?
And I'm the edgy one.
I'm not. I didn't say it sucked. I didn't say everything in the NFL sucks like you do
no,
every
not
5 minutes.
Everything in the NFL sucks.
Boy, this is a big heyday for sports documentarians. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities out mm-hmm. there between the 30 on the 30s and the, and the NFL life and yeah. now the SEC.
But not even just that.
Steve Sable tonight.
The 9
right?
on 9 or whatever.
Yeah,
the, like small yeah. ones they're making for these sports centers
right,
and different
right.
things. And
yeah.
Quality. I don't know if you know, sports are pretty popular right now.
No, but
I think that
and there's
when
a
those
lot
are
of
done
networks
well,
that need content.
Right. When those are done well, I think those are fantastic.
Yeah,
the HBO
quality.
Ones are unbelievable.
It's good to see some quality
Marty
stuff.
Glickman one you should watch, Fred.
Marty Glickman.
OK. Okay.
That's what he used to sound like.
I had no idea what he sounded like.
He used to do the Jets games.
Okay.
This was Molly.
I learned
Clinton
something every day with
when he
Freddie
was a Jets fan.
When he was a Jets fan. He brought up earlier that the AFC East is the only division in football that doesn't have a team with a losing record. I go, so you must be very upset about that. The Jets don't have a losing record. And it's just
Paul
a fun
was,
fact.
Paul was proud of
and all
it.
Of a sudden, all of a sudden, it turned into a fun fact.
It was just a fun fact. He has a fun fact. You know,
he turned it into a fun fact.
Conspiratorial reason why I said that. You know?
No, I thought you might have been upset about
fact.
It.
Chester from Portland's on the line.
It's
hey,
just
Chester.
A fun fact.
Go What's F yourself. Going on, guys? How you doing?
Whoa. Good.
Instead of bringing it and being all fast and furious today, I wanted to be the conversationalist and ask you guys a few questions. So,
okay.
First off, Paulie, I know I shot you a little tweet after the game, but you know, have you changed your stance slightly about the fact that this team was a little more prepared, winning a close couple games early on against the Jets and Bills?
What?
You know, we talked about the importance of where I brought up the point of how I thought it was really important that the Pats had won those close two games against the Jets and Bills and.
Oh no! No, I'm not. I haven't come around on that. I like to win games.
Okay.
I don't care. I don't care what the score is. I just want to win. I mean, the better we play, the better it is. I don't care if it's close, blowout, whatever.
Okay. The mental fortitude to me seemed like it was there, you know. And
you thought they showed mental fortitude in the last 6 minutes of that game?
Well, the defense, and I think the momentum
really
big time after Sudfeld. But you know, I think overall with the game being the way it was, I just felt like the team had some stones, and you know, Atlanta gave it everything they could. But I just took away with the fact that the team, you know, the young members of the team, I think, you know, were a little more mentally prepared on that. I just wanted to gauge you and see if I don't get it.
But. I think as many situations that you can see, the better you're going to be. Whether it's coming from behind, holding on to a lead, getting blown out, and knowing what that feeling's like, I think every little situation helps you in the long run. With your experience.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't think playing poorly against bad teams and squeaking by helps you.
Okay. All right. Well,
I agree with you. Situations, you know, it's nice to be returning an onside, having recovered an onside kick. That will help them the next time they have to recover an onside kick.
Yeah.
That I agree with you in situational, Freddie. I agree with your premise on that.
Hopefully they recover it next time.
Yeah, listen, you know, I know a lot of people are killing Sudfeld for it.
No, I'm not killing him for it.
A lot of people are. It happens. Once in a while, an onside kick takes a funny bounce. I don't look at that and say, oh, they weren't prepared for that. Or Sudfeld doesn't belong out there. He's overwhelmed.
No. He was in the right position.
It
bounced
a little
funny, yeah.
It took a weird bounce, and unfortunately, it gave Atlanta life. But I don't look at that as being like a disaster, and I agree with you, Fred. The next time a situation like that happens, he'll probably be more prepared for it.
Yep. All right. Well, you know, my whole plan with this team is I want them to be ready for every situation, and I just felt like, man, with all those blowout wins that we've had in the past, you know, when it came down to a game, I just felt like we weren't mentally prepared, and I just want to see that continue to improve. Now, my next question to you guys, if the league shuts down A.J. Green this week, is that a clear that we got to make a move to get this guy on board on a long-term deal? I know we talked about, you know, the idea that this is becoming more and more of a reality with the way that he's played, but if some aces against A.J. Green, do you think that's a clear-cut sign that we got to crap to get off the spot with him?
I think that sign has already been reached. I mean, this team has looked for a cornerback for long enough. They found one that works. And I know it's only a short sample of, 10 games or whatever it is now, but I'm ready to sign up. I've seen them throw enough crap out there that it's time to say this guy works here, and I know there's the hesitancy because it's him and it's history and all that, but it works.
I'd be afraid, Nick. I'd be afraid to let him go.
You'd be afraid to let him go?
Yeah, I'd be afraid, but just because of what Andy just said. I mean, Ty Law, Asante Samuel, the search has been on, and they clearly don't know how to draft it.
And you wouldn't be afraid to sign into a long-term deal
now? I'd be afraid to do that, too, but I think I'd be more afraid to be without him.
I'd agree with Paul.
Yeah.
You're more afraid to be.
What's the worst that happens if you sign for a long-term deal?
I think a 3-year deal is really the
stop.
Spot. I mean,
stop.
Yeah, I just want to see him finish with Brady. You know, I think that's really the kind of the end of our shelf life in terms of getting a ring, and I think that should coincide with that plan.
Did you say a three-year deal?
3-year deal. You know,
if you could get him for that, then I don't even see a risk.
Yeah, but what's the market? Is it the market we saw last year, or is it the market for $50 million?
Yeah. See.
Which one is it?
I think it's 2 years ago because those are the cornerbacks that are comparable to him that signed. You know, the Finnegans and the Cars. That's what they got. I don't think last year you saw guys that were at his level. I think Brent Grimes might have been the best cornerback on the market last year.
Mm. Or Tlaib.
In Tlaib.
The only guy on his level was him.
But obviously.
Right. He's thought of differently now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the thing that attracts me aside from his skill is that mental swagger. I just think it's rubbing off on other guys. I like it. And I think that that has been a component that he's bringing that I didn't really see last year in terms of that swagger and just that, I don't know, there's a certain mindset that I really like about him. It's bringing a sense of leadership and
yeah.
That.
Yeah, I agree. You're right. And you know, and the MO with him is, you know, he had that temper, he had those problems. But on the opposite side, I think he actually has fun playing football.
Oh, no,
you know,
oh,
he
God,
really
yes.
enjoys
he's
it.
He's a showman. He yeah, is definitely a showman.
That, remember, he has fun.
When we were in Philly for those practices, and he was there was that day when he was getting all Wee! Riled up on the sidelines, and we saw that in. When he intercepted the pass against the Jets, was it the Jets game at the end when he sealed the win with that?
Right. And he hopped up and down and Jermaine Gold hit him.
Exactly. Right. And we've saw it on the sideline in it was another game this year. I think maybe it was the last game.
Playing the role of Andy on the show is Eric, where you can't name any of the games.
Well, when he sat down on the bench at the end of the game,
that was this week.
One of the funniest moments.
That was right. Up and he crossed his legs.
Yeah, it's like, what else you got?
Yeah. I mean, you're right. He does love. You can tell he loves.
For
being
all the
up
anger,
he was the baddest man in the stadium.
I think he really,
that night.
Really enjoys playing football. You know what I mean? And yeah.
He also doesn't seem that angry to me.
Yeah,
I've seen guys that seem to have anger. Mm. Even I'm even talking about in like a stupid locker
Corey
room,
Dillon.
Like yes. when the third question comes back around about the same topic, you see them almost bristle.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
he has none of that.
No,
he like. I haven't seen it.
I think he likes talking to the media.
Because he's a showman. And that's how showmen, you know, build up, you know? It's P.T. Right. Barnum. You got to talk up the show.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen him threaten anybody like Dillon did.
He seems very popular in the locker room.
He's been a yes. pleasure to deal with from a media perspective. Not that that counts for anything. But just to back up Andy and Eric's point, after the Tampa Bay game, there was a huge scrum around his locker, and I was way on the outside, and I was writing about the defense in the secondary, and I needed to get him. And he had answered all the questions, and then Albert Breer comes over and needed to do a one-on-one with him for NFL Network. And then when that was done, I said, listen, I know you already answered all that. And he was like, oh, no problem, man. And like Andy and Eric just said,
the numbers.
He went right through it again.
Corey Dillon never said no problem man to me.
And
Corey Dillon was an angry a-hole.
He doesn't have that angry, but some of the guys that have had some off-field issues haven't had that angry
persona. No, I know.
That comes out.
But
you know, some of the guys that have had issues.
This is a guy that had angry on-field issues with teammates. This guy had anger issues in every aspect of his life. There was no double life for Tlaib. He was having problems at home, problems in the car on the way to work, and problems at work. So this is a guy that had anger issues. Maybe he's past them. Maybe something happened.
Maybe he grew up. Maybe he found the second chance in New England and really bought into it. Maybe who knows?
Maybe it's Tampa. Maybe Tampa has turned into Oakland, where we give guys a pass for being a-holes in Tampa.
We're trying to get Gerald McCoy now. That's the new
that's
one.
That's the first thing I thought of.
That's the new one.
That's the first thing I thought
let's
of.
Let's just go to them and get their best player.
And,
I mean, it's already
Borges
a farm
said
system
it the other
for
day.
Us.
Maybe if they can get their AAA team in Tampa to ship up a D-lineman.
You know, we might as well keep to do it. Gerald McCoy, bring him on.
Well, that coach is going to be in.
He replaced Vince.
Hearing that coach is going to be in UConn next year.
Who? Shiano?
Yeah.
Yeah, UConn fired Pasqualano.
Well, that would be a good job for him.
It certainly would. Yes.
That'd be a good move for both teams.
Yes,
yeah.
And I think he's going to be out in Tampa because it's going down the Josh McDaniels debacle.
Well, yeah. Because he's going to preemptively leave knowing that he's not wanted there anymore.
But, you know, before we leave on Tlaib, you know, you wonder, remember last year when he was a free agent in March and there was, I think our buddy Mike Giardi had some comments that he was throwing out there about the team was reticent to, you know, sort of go long term because they didn't think he worked hard enough. They didn't, you know, he was injured when he was here, but he wasn't doing any extra.
Yeah.
Remember, I think that was the way he put it. He doesn't do anything extra. Maybe they sat down and said, listen, you show us that you deserve this. And then what did you see? All spring, he was, and Belichick has raved about it every time he's talked about him. A top participant in the offseason program. He's well-liked in the locker room, shown great leadership in the locker room, and maybe that strong offseason that he had has helped him physically with the hip, that he's not showing any signs of any physical problems.
Yeah, but
maybe
if I'm
not
him, money talks and BS walks, Bill.
But maybe
I've
it's
heard
time.
Every time you've praised me, and I appreciate it, sign me.
But that's what I'm saying. Maybe now the Patriots said, okay, you showed it to me, and I'm going to show it to you.
Now?
You mean now, like as in
money,
extension?
Andy. I don't know why
you
have to
be concerned
so
with that?
Of course I would. That's what I said to Chester.
That's the ultimate, you know, contract year.
Absolutely.
Doing everything.
Oh, now I'm going to pay you, so now you're going to do it the way I want. And then you go back to doing it the way you want.
Even Ty Law, a lot of people think got fat and happy in the late 90s.
That's a risk.
Well, Parcells would tell you that Law always had a problem, you know, keeping in condition.
I'm not just saying pure condition. I'm resting on laurels, paid and not really as dedicated and ready.
Do you think they would go the Ninkovich route and try to extend him now before it gets there?
Sure, if they could.
Yeah, well, like Chester said.
Especially if the Ninkovich route is a discount deal.
Exactly, like a 3-year deal, to me, is a discount deal, unless you're really overpaying, annual, which I don't think the
Patriots
would
do. You just franchise him and go year to year?
And we were talking about.
Do you worry about that?
Because he could hold out like a Samuel.
You do the Samuel thing where you hold out, and then maybe the only way you get him to come back is if you say you won't franchise him again.
There's risks no matter which direction you go.
Absolutely.
You hand him $50 million, it's a risk. You try to franchise him, it's a risk.
Either way, you can't afford to let him go.
Tough business. All right. Hey, John. Hey, by the way, Stripper says that since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970, only four teams, the 92 Seahawks, 8.75, 91 Colts, 8.9, and the 76 Buccaneers, 8.9, and 74 Falcons, 7.9, have averaged single-digit scoring for the season.
Wow.
So it looked like the Falcons with 7.9 and 74 would be the lowest-scoring team.
But that's a 14-game season.
True.
Yeah, but is still he going an average. 7.9?
But I think it's a total points record.
Well, 92, the Seahawks
they had
were 8.75.
Scored less than the 16.
Maybe. Yeah. Seahawks were 8.75.
I thought it was like 129 points or something ridiculously low.
I don't know. Anyway, John Rooks here with the playbook. Hey, John.
What brought the argument up about lowest scoring?
No argument. We're wondering what the lowest scoring team of all time is, and can Jacksonville
do that? I know they're on pace to break it.
What is Jacksonville's average right now?
I don't know. Not good. They had a safety in one game.
Get in the way. I don't know.
They had a safety in one game.
They would have to be pretty pathetic over 16 games to break that record. Without
they're on pace.
They've been pretty pathetic over four.
Yeah, I think they are pretty pathetic.
Yeah, but there's lots of time to go, right?
Right.
There's no reason to get worse, too.
They play Denver in Denver in 2 weeks, and Vegas has that right now. It's a 28-point spread. And it would be the highest spread. I think the Patriots' biggest one in 07 was 25.
That's ridiculous.
Now, Fred, I don't want to start a new topic right before John Rook's show, but what happens if Peyton Manning runs the table and goes 19-0 and wins the Super Bowl?
You just started a new topic before John's show, and I'm not going to discuss it.
Fred's not mentally prepared to talk about that.
Save that one for
that
later.
I'm not mentally prepared. I'm not even mentally prepared for them to go 16-0.
Can't wrap your
if
head around
did,
that one too much.
Hypothetically, where would they fall in the Wilson Hart Power Index? 11?
Good, Paul. All right, John, have a good show.
Thanks, Fred.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now. 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.